The meeting comes to order.
Madam Chair?
Our first order of business will be to do our minutes.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that we approve the minutes from the March 13th meeting.
Are there any corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. Okay, so with that, I'd like to welcome our distinguished chair today, who will be walking us through the bill and giving us a little preview of what's going to be happening over the next day and a half. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And before I move the bill, I wanted to just make one announcement as the chair, I'm going to walk through the bill and for the first few minutes here today. And then I apologize to the committee. I like many of you, I have another bill in another committee. I will come back as soon as I can to hear the public testimony, and particularly the public testimony of opponents. We've heard a lot from proponents of this bill. I'm especially interested in hearing from people who have concerns about the bill. And so we're going to hear them. We're going to hear supporters first and then opponents. And then I wanted to let the committee know as well, and I've talked with Representative Beard, the minority lead, and he's okay with this plan, which is that I'll present the bill rather than the usual back and forth with the author. We want to get the public in as quickly as possible, especially people that have traveled, and get their testimony on the record. Do as much of that as we possibly can today. We'll reconvene, as has been published tonight, to take additional public testimony, but we'll do the markup, we'll do the amendments and the voting on the bill tomorrow so that everybody can be here. We've counted at least 7 members that have other committee meetings tonight, as well as a couple of others that have other commitments. So we certainly don't want to be voting on this bill and discussing amendments with a skeletal crew on hand here. So to guarantee that we'll have everybody here for that very important part of the hearing, we'll extend into tomorrow, and I'm sure that we'll be able to get our amendments done and vote in our committee allotted committee time tomorrow. So I hope that's okay with everybody. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 2395 for referral to the Tax Committee.
Okay. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So just a couple of comments I want to make before I present the bill. First of all, thanking our incredible staff, Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee, for the work that they've put in to preparing this bill, and of course our great researchers for both the Republican caucus and the Democratic caucus, Mr. Nicely and Ms. Nelson. Thank you for your work as well. This is a big bill. It's complicated, and a lot of work goes into it, so I want to thank the staff for their hard work. We have heard a lot over these last couple of years about the needs of the state of Minnesota in terms of transportation, our roads, bridges, and transit infrastructure. We've had many members of this committee and many members of the legislature come to this committee with specific projects in mind, whether it's Highway 14 or I-94 or Highway 23, Highway 70. I think everyone on this committee can start to recite these projects in their sleep. Projects like the Gateway Transit Corridor or Cedar BRT, Bottineau Light Rail. All of these have had hearings before this committee. And all of these projects are, as well as our basic maintenance of our infrastructure, our pavement, our roads, are in great need of funding and upkeep and maintenance. And what we've heard, though, is that we don't have the money to do these projects. Members, this is your opportunity to move the state in the direction of funding these projects and maintaining them over the long term. This is our opportunity collectively as a body to say, yes, we believe that all of these projects that people have come to this committee for are important, they're vital, they're urgent, and we have the mechanism to fund them now and into the long term. So that's the purpose of this bill, to be able to move forward on the myriad projects, as well as maintaining our basic infrastructure that we have heard so much about over this last couple of years in this committee. So what I'd like to do, Madam Chair and members, is just quickly go over the basic outline and principles of this bill, and then we'll get into the public discussion. And again, I would urge members that have specific questions of me, you know, we can hold off on those after the public testimony so we can give the public the opportunity to testify. So we start off knowing that half of our pavement is over 50 years old. It's at the end of its design life. Our current per gallon tax on motor fuels continues to decline as vehicles become more fuel efficient. Our funding cannot keep up with current and future needs. This bill seeks to address those shortfalls. Article 1 authorizes trunk highway bond proceeds for the Corridors of Commerce program, and I was very pleased with our bipartisan support of that effort that we started last year in this committee. We have $200 million, $50 million per year for 4 years in trunk highway bond proceeds. Also for the TED program, which has been something that Representative Mahoney has championed so well and effectively over the last couple of years. Now, one of the key features of this bill is Article 2. That imposes a 5% gross receipts tax at the first sale, the point of sale, the wholesale level, as is the case that we currently do with the gas tax. So the Department of Revenue will determine the applicable gross receipts for motor fuels tax rate, which will be greater of either 10 cents per gallon or 5% of the annual Minnesota total wholesale gas price by refiners for the previous fiscal year. And members, here's what is critical to understand about this provision. Our current gas tax does not keep up with inflation. It's actually declining in value. So we need to find a new mechanism, as they've done in Virginia and Maryland and other states, that actually keeps up with inflation and that will continue to increase our net revenues for transportation rather than the declining gas tax proceeds that we get. So this is a new and important feature of this legislation. And again, we are cognizant of the fact that other states, including Virginia, on a bipartisan basis, the Republican legislature, House of Representatives in Virginia, led by the Republican Speaker, imposed a gross receipts tax. They recognize that's the future for transportation funding. Maryland then followed quickly. Other states are doing this. This is what we need to do in order to keep up with our needs. The gas tax will simply not keep up with our needs, and that's why we are doing the gross receipts tax. Article 3 expands the definition of the metropolitan area for the purposes of a transit tax to include all 7 counties. As you will recall, when we passed the transportation bill in 2008, the County's Transit Improvement Board was created. There were 5 counties in that board. Scott and Carver opted out of that. This actually now makes our 7 county system whole, and we include Scott and Carver in that arrangement. And so we have a local sales tax of 1% minus the rate imposed by the county, the local option tax that was enacted in 2008. So we'll have a uniform penny tax for transit throughout the region. So, you know, there's a lot of different provisions then about this. I don't want to go into all the details. People that are familiar with the 2008 legislation understand we have a whole structure with the County's Transit Improvement Board. There's a GEARS committee that includes cities. We give some additional guidelines for how that money is used. We identify some transit corridors that are in the Met Council plan, you know, including in the West and East Metro area. Article 4 addresses the CASA distribution, the distribution of leased vehicle sales tax proceeds. That's $32 million that currently goes to the general fund, and we have a distribution formula for that for Greater Minnesota Transit and counties. There will be amendments related to this, so I don't want people to get too excited about the 70-30 split. There will be some amendments. So, actually, some amendments related to some of these previous sections as well. I think Representative Earhart has one that actually lowers the rate of taxation for the gross receipts tax, and we have some other ones. So we'll be talking about those tomorrow. Article 5 talks about the right-of-way loan acquisition fund, known as RALF, and you know, we have some authority changes in terms of that. Article 6 requires MnDOT in each fiscal year to spend the total amount in federal transportation funds in a competitive grant program in Greater Minnesota. The total $16 million in excess of the average annual spending on Greater Minnesota transportation alternatives. This is some ideas that Representative Bernardi has put forward, and so they're now in Article 1. So we Article 6, I'm sorry. So that's the bill. I think the two most important provisions are the gross receipts tax and the changes that we make to the metro sales tax. And again, there's some other kinds of more minor issues, but that's the gist of the bill. And with that, Madam Chair, I don't know. I know people do probably are anxious to ask questions, but maybe if we want to do one or two, we could. But I think it's important to get to the public testimony.
Right.
So.
Well, it looks like our members are ready for the public testimony as well, so we can.
Okay, and I my sincere apologies. I hope to be back soon, and I especially hope to be back to hear from the opponents of the bill. And I want to thank all the supporters for coming out in such large numbers as you have for our previous two hearings. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. What we'll do is we're going to divide up the time so we can do it so everyone has the opportunity to provide the same amount of testimony. And we might be able to allow people 3 to 4 minutes is the way our guru for our finance person over here has calculated for us. And what we'll do is we'll get the person on deck so that they'll be ready to move in and to be able to provide the testimony. So with that, we'll start with Jason George and Patrick Baker. And Jason will begin with our public testimony. Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jason George. I'm legislative and political director with the Operating Engineers Local 49. We represent 13,000 members, most of whom work in the transportation industry, building the roads and bridges and transit systems of this state. Normally, I'd prepare some nice testimony for you, but I'm just going to cover a few points here off the cuff and speak sort of from the heart a little bit. About in general about the situation that we're facing in transportation, not in specifics on the bill. There'll be plenty of people behind me, smarter than me, that can talk about the specifics of the bill, believe me. So the first point I want to make quickly is that we have a funding crisis in transportation. I think everybody knows that. In particular, on the federal level, in September, the government runs out of money. They run out of money for the Highway Trust Fund. It starts a deficit starting in September. And quite frankly, to the people that make their living and earn a paycheck in this industry and their families, they're terrified of that. And the contractors that employ them are too. So we have an urgent need to do something right now. If we do nothing here in Minnesota and the Congress doesn't act, we're looking at a couple $100 million shortfall starting in 2015 for our transportation program. That means real projects gone. That means real families without jobs. So I guess my main point on the funding crisis is, you know, with what's going on in Washington these days with Congress, I don't think we can afford in Minnesota to gamble on a do-nothing Congress and expect them to get their work done in September. I don't know anybody that has any broad hopes for that. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. That's how we feel. Second point, other states. This is a difficult issue when you're talking about taxing, raising revenue, all the complicated formulas, different interest groups. This is a very complex thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. But you should know that, as the Chairman Hornstein mentioned, 8 other states have acted. Pennsylvania, Virginia, Maryland, Massachusetts, Vermont, Wyoming, Arkansas, Texas, and Missouri is pretty close. Those are all states that have put rolled up their sleeves, got the hard politics done, and passed infrastructure spending, increased taxes a little bit, decreased some taxes too in some cases, and got some new money, whether it be from new revenue, combination of everything, for transportation infrastructure. I don't see any reason why Minnesota can't do the same. Third point, middle-class jobs. That's all I hear about at the Capitol these days, and our members are hearing about, is middle-class jobs. Everybody's for middle-class jobs. Everybody's for, you know, doing things to get folks from low-wage jobs to the middle-class jobs, which we support 100%. There is no bigger bill, no bigger thing that you could do in this year to create middle-class jobs than to pass a transportation infrastructure bill. $1 billion worth of spending on transportation infrastructure equals about 30,000 jobs. Not one of those jobs is a low-paying job. They're all middle-class jobs. So, I mean, we hear this talk, our members hear this talk, and they're ready for you guys to act. And it's right in front of you right now. Last point, as you can tell probably from my tone of voice, that people are frustrated. I hear from members every day. I'll just tell you, on the bus back from our lobby day, which was last week, we had a couple hundred members here that met with a lot of you sitting around this table right now. And on the bus, the conversation was, you know, they're asking me, Jason, you know, not one of our legislators disagreed that we need to do something on transportation. They're all for it. But they all told us we can't do anything about it. Why? They don't understand that. And quite frankly, I don't understand that. So I wanted to make those four points to you and set up for what you're going to hear about with the details of the bill, which are, again, smarter people than me are going to give you all kinds of lovely points about the details of the bill. But those are things that real people are feeling right now. I know that we have members here today. There's laborers here today, Teamsters here today, I see. Everybody that works in the transportation construction industry is frustrated. So I encourage you, I implore you for them to do something this year to fix that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. Mr. Baker, welcome
morning.
To the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Patrick Baker, and I am the Director of Government and Institutional Affairs for Greater Mankato Growth. The Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development organization serving over 800 members in the Greater Mankato area. And in fact, I've brought about 45 of my close community members here with me today, so I'm happy to have them here. And I'm honored to be here and look forward to sharing with you why investing in transportation infrastructure is crucial for the economic vitality of our region. But before I forget, please allow me to thank Representative Johnson for his tremendous leadership on behalf of our community and particularly on this issue. And please allow me to thank this entire committee for your efforts last year to pass quarters of commerce funding. As you know, we're making good use of those dollars by continuing to make progress on completing Highway 14. We like the program so much, in fact, that Greater Mankato Growth will be sending you all a letter later this week encouraging you to pass additional quarters of commerce funding this legislative session. But today I'm going to talk about the importance of transportation and importance of transportation to support continued growth of our economy and share through the results of a survey that Greater Mankato Growth did of our members. So as you may have heard, Greater Mankato's economy is experiencing tremendous growth. I want to highlight for you just a few examples that are emblematic of that growth and vitality happening in Greater Mankato. The Greater Mankato region received its designation as a metropolitan statistical area in 2008. And currently has a population of over 98,000, up 14% since 2000. We are number 43 in the nation and top in the state for the fastest growing gross domestic product. We have the fastest job growth in the state, and Forbes magazine predicts that we will have the highest long-term job growth of all MSAs in the state, or all MSAs in the country of less than 250,000. We are a level one regional trade center with retail spending per capita double all other Minnesota metros, suggesting that large volumes of traffic coming in out of our community every day for their shopping. And our region's agricultural heart continues to pump with the largest agricultural income of all Greater Minnesota MSAs and livestock income that is higher than Omaha, Nebraska. And we aren't slowing down anytime soon. Greater Mankato is poised to have its most successful year on record in 2014, particularly as you're aware, Walmart and FedEx will be constructing major distribution facilities in Mankato this year, adding to the already high commercial vehicle levels on Highway 14 and other highways throughout southern Minnesota and our entire state. So the key thread in all of this is that we need the need for our community to efficiently and safely move goods and individuals out of and into our market and across our entire region has never been more important. Yet as southern Minnesota's economy is thriving and growing, our infrastructure is not keeping up. But our members recognize that the investments we need in infrastructure will cost money. In fact, a survey of Greater Mankato Growth conducted of our members on transportation, 72%, and these are majority business members of respondents agreed or strongly agreed with the statement that the state needs additional revenue to keep our transportation safe, effective, and properly maintained. And when we asked them about what that future transportation revenue source ought to be, 49% agreed or strongly agreed that when asked that if the state should transition away from the gas tax in favor of another revenue source, well, 29% disagree with that. So in conclusion, as southern Minnesota and our region continues to grow and become an even bigger contributor to the state's economy, we expect our partners, our public partners, to do their share by making the necessary investments to provide a safe and efficient transportation infrastructure that supports the region's businesses and commuters. The longer these critical investments are put off, the more lives will be lost, the more expensive these projects will become, and the more regional economic growth that will be foregone. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Well, we had two very good examples for keeping testimony very concise and helpful. Thank you very much. Commissioner Carter, you're up now, and then on deck is Kent Solem.
Thank you very much to the chair and members. I just want to appreciate the opportunity to be here today to speak in favor of passage of HF 2395. I am from Ramsey County on the Board of Commissioners there and also this year's president of the Minnesota Association of Counties. I want to share with you that at the association as we traveled around the state this year, the most consistent mention from counties is the need for revenue for transportation. In fact, 80 of our counties have passed resolutions in support of more transportation funding over the past 2 years. So, a high priority for the Association of Minnesota Counties is legislation to pass a comprehensive multimodal transportation finance package. Transportation infrastructure all over the state is in disrepair and is in dire need of maintenance and reconstruction and new options to fit the changing lifestyles and demographics of Minnesotans all across the state. And the needs have been well documented through the Governor's Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, on which I served. County boards all over the state have taken tough votes themselves to increase taxes on their constituents and to provide for our local roads through the wheelage tax and through the local option sales tax authority. We're calling on you now as state legislators to also make the same commitment through passage of this bill. The bill has something for everyone in all regions and as well as important efficiency and transparency measures. The Association of Minnesota County staff, commissioners, and county engineers worked this past summer and fall and agreed that something encompassed in this bill, which is a reform to the county state aid highway formula, will help to simplify the distribution and provide greater clarity in distribution as combined with significant new funding. Additionally, the gross tax receipts concept within the bill is an important step toward a more sustainable and a more efficient transportation funding. Our per gallon formula simply isn't keeping up with construction inflation and due to changes in our marketplace and more fuel efficient vehicles. The gross receipts tax will provide predictability and sustainability, and it will allow us to more effectively keep pace with increases in materials prices. The bill has much needed increases in funding also for congestion mitigation and for transit expansion in the metro area. And this will help to keep our region competitive and attract business and talent to our area. The bike and pedestrian connection funding will enhance our transportation options and safety as well across the state. And the funding for the Corridors of Commerce program, of course, will address critical state routes that have been waiting for improvements for many years. I encourage you to please support this bill this year. so that we can get to work and make certain that our state is competitive and that our transportation and transit needs are met, even as other states also move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Carter. And if you could just say your name and the hat you are wearing today for the record, that would be wonderful.
I am Commissioner Tony Carter, and the hat I am wearing is for the Association of Minnesota Counties as its president.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Kent Sulem, and I see Margaret Donna, who knows the... Oh, we're going together? Yeah, I kind of know the program here. Thank you very much. And then on deck is Amanda Dewar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance.
Welcome to the committee. You may proceed.
Thank you. I want to express our strong support for House File 2395. We appreciate the fact that this is a comprehensive bill that provides additional revenue for highways, transit, bike and pedestrian facilities, and that it's statewide. We think that this is critical. You've heard a lot about the needs, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but clearly we have huge and growing needs on all of our transportation system. And unless something is done to change the funding sources that we have, we will continue to fall farther and farther behind. And I think, as you can tell from driving around the roads this spring, the public is very much aware of the deterioration of our roads and the problems that we have with potholes, and the cost to drivers is very real when they have to pay hundreds of dollars to have their cars fixed. It's a very real cost when the state is not taking care of this important public asset. So we appreciate this bill. I wanted to spend just a couple of minutes focusing a little bit more on the gross receipts tax on fuel. And you should have a handout that has an Alliance logo on it. Because there has been a lot of confusion and sometimes some inaccuracies about how this would work. So I just wanted to talk a little bit, again, about how the current fuel tax is collected. I think as Chairman Hornstein mentioned, the current fuel tax is collected currently and remitted to the Department of Revenue by about 423 fuel distributors. That is the point of collection today. The distributors obviously pass that cost on to the gas stations. The gas stations pass that cost on to the consumers at the pump. But from the state's perspective, where the state collects the tax is from the distributors. And this bill does not change that. There's no change in this bill in the point of collection, in who pays the tax, how the tax is collected, what the exemptions are. None of that changes. Basically, how this works is it would be an adjustment on an annual basis calculated by the Department of Revenue to the per gallon tax. So it becomes sort of a blended number that includes the existing excise tax along with the calculated amount from the gross receipts tax, which would be converted into a cents per gallon equivalent. So that makes it very simple, very cost effective administratively to collect this tax. But the benefit, of course, is that it's a tax based on the price of fuel. So as the price increases, the revenue will increase and will keep up with inflation, whereas simply increasing the current per gallon tax, it's kind of like spinning your wheels, because not only will the real dollar value of that increase decrease in the future, but when you compare that with construction inflation, the purchasing power will also decrease in the future. So that's why other states and even the federal government is looking at this option, basically a sales tax on fuel, as a way to get around the inherent problem that we have with a per gallon tax that relies on consumption of fuel, which will go down in the future. So I wanted to clarify that. There's been a lot of confusion because this doesn't change the point of collection. This is no more or less hidden than the current fuel tax. It's also the way it's drafted as a gross receipts tax, which is a tax on the business of selling fuel. It fits the language in Minnesota's Constitution, that requires that that revenue be deposited in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So this money would be constitutionally dedicated. It would have to be used for a highway purpose, according to the Constitution. That's another important thing for our members. And again, I think the important thing is that this is a way to make this revenue source much more sustainable into the future. That's why we think that this is a really important piece of this bill. And again, you're going to hear about the cost of this. We have, of course, huge needs, and this will not address all of the highway needs. We think that this will put a significant dent in meeting the highway needs that are out there. But the cost to the consumer, the cost to the average driver, is really not that significant. When you look at the average number of miles driven and the average fuel efficiency of cars, the average driver, this would cost them about the equivalent of a cup of coffee per week. On an annual basis, it's much less than the cost of a front-end alignment. So this is not a huge burden, we don't think. And again, the more you drive, the more you pay. So this is something we think the public supports as a user fee and will be very supportive when they will see the benefits, the projects that get done because we're able to get this increase in revenue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships.
And yes, thank you for introducing yourself. If you can just hold on a second, we do have a question from Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as we continue this conversation, for Ms. Donahoe, there are two things I would like to ask you to comment on, Ms. Donahoe. I've been around here a while. I've heard you speak in many settings and venues. And as we're talking about a stable and sustainable source of funding, I'm having a flashback to the motor vehicle sales tax for transit. When we talked about stable and sustainable sources of funding, one of the hues and cry that I've heard when I first got here and for many years afterwards was, you know, if we could just dedicate the motor vehicle sales tax, which I agree was necessary and needed to happen, that was a political promise that was started back in the 1970s that we finally fulfilled, and thank you for your help on that. But part of the rationale for selling that was that it would be the sustainable and predictable source going forward in the future that would help fund transit needs. No sooner did we pass it than we hit the Great Recession and revenues tanked. And so here we are with the sales tax and motor vehicles now, not meeting the need. All of a sudden, it's not stable, it's not sustainable. And so now we're still looking for that magic whatever to fix the need that we have. So now we're talking about the gross receipts tax, which is a percentage of the price of gasoline at the wholesale level. Help me not have deja vu, or tell me why I shouldn't have this again. Because at the moment, gas in my neighborhood is up to $3.69. I have no idea why. But I do know that the price of a barrel of crude has stayed pretty steady and in some cases falling. And what happens to us when gas falls back down to, $2.95 a gallon or something to that effect? I want to just talk about this because I've been there, heard this, and I'm seeing it again. But
Ms. Donahoe?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Beard. Yes, we always struggle, it seems, with not really meeting the needs. And we try to make that very clear that whatever legislation gets passed, whether it was the dedication of the motor vehicle sales tax or the bill in 2008, that it will not meet all of the needs that are out there. The reason that we have this structured, or we would like to see this structured as a combination of the per gallon tax and the gross receipts tax, is to deal with some of that volatility. We know there is more volatility in the price of fuel, but at the same time, if you look historically at the last 20, 30 years at fuel prices, it's pretty clear that the trend has been, overall, has been upward. So in looking at that, and again, looking at forecasts for consumption, which are going down, this seems like a way to try and provide more stability without being totally reliant on the percentage of the price of fuel. But again, trying to find some way of adjusting this so it does a better job of keeping up with inflation.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for doing a little explaining on that. And I know there's others that are going to testify about the gross receipts tax. One of the things that would be helpful to the committee from either your organization or others would be some sort of a rough pro forma on what it would look like if the price of gas went to $4 or dropped to $3.10. What would that mean in swings in the fund, so we kind of know what we're setting ourselves up for? The second part of my question is a political question, Madam Chair. Ms. Donahoe, you know, we have the Move Minnesota group is the folks that I've seen and heard here for a few years, and you're doing a masterful job of talking to us here. However, the public is the one that sends us here. And, oh, by the way, did anybody notice this is an election year? And everybody in this around this table is up for re-election, or these positions are all up for re-elections, maybe a more accurate way to say it, Ms. Donahoe. But and I'm not saying this to be scornful or to chide anyone, but one party controls the entire legislative process here. You could get this done if that's all there was to consider it. But having chaired this committee, when the Senate and the House were both in the party I sit in at control, I can tell you how difficult it is politically to reach a consensus, even when you've got everybody on your side heading the same way. The political pressures from our districts and from others really don't emanate from the people sitting in this room, who all have a vested interest in a $700 million tax increase. I get that. But suppose we would pass this bill. What is your organization going to do to provide cover when we go back home and say, please vote for us again because we just raised your taxes $700 million? Oh, by the way, we're going to build more trains in Hennepin County, and we might get around to building your bridge on Highway 14, too. Is there a plan for that, for the political side of this equation?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Donahoe.
Thank you, Representative Beard. I think that the results of the bill that passed in 2008 are something that we have spent a lot of time trying to highlight as much as we can with the public. There was a gas tax increase passed in 2008 in an election year, and because of that, we've seen major projects done that would not have been done, bridges like the Hastings Bridge and a number of other bridges getting done. I think the benefit in transportation is that we can show the public exactly what they get for their tax dollars in transportation. And we can show them projects that won't get done for 20 years unless the legislature does something to increase funding. So I think that if the legislature, and we certainly hope that you do, support this, we will have projects that we will be able to show the public. Guess what? This piece of 14 is getting done because your legislator voted for the funding to make that happen. And we think that that's very powerful for people running for re-election.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're probably asking you because you've been the person as part of this for the most amount of time, but anyone else coming up could answer the questions I have as well. As you and others sat around a table to put this particular package together, I mean, in the case of infrastructure and particularly in the case of transportation, equity, fairness is always probably second to condition of infrastructure the biggest issue. You will see that as amendments come forward, many of them come out of a feeling that one person or another or one region or another thinks there's something unfair. How did that guide the coalition's discussions, and particularly on the issue of did we tax fairly? Does the bill tax fairly? And does the bill assure spending fairly? Does everybody pay? And is there some assurance that everyone receives the benefit? How did that guide the thinking of this particular package? And I would invite anyone testifying today to talk about
this. Ms. Donahoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would say two things. First of all, as someone who's the head of a statewide coalition of very diverse interests, that's something we deal with all the time. And it is a balancing act to make sure that some benefits are accruing to every part of the state, to all parts of the system. And it is a challenge in transportation because you're dealing with a system that's interconnected. Some parts of that system have greater needs than other parts of the system, just in terms of the physical condition of them, and sometimes they don't, that doesn't fit neat geographic or political boundaries. But it's, we have to focus on the transportation system and what the transportation system needs foremost. And I think a lot of our members understand that. Sometimes you have to sort of wait your turn for your project or your part of the state because there are higher needs in other parts of the system. I think we always try to be sensitive to how much, you know, different areas are paying and how the distribution works, the distribution formulas we spend a lot of time on. But again, it is a system, and everyone benefits from that system to some extent, whether you're in the cities and you're getting products from outstate, you know, shipped here or vice versa. Everybody benefits from the fact that there is a system. So we, in putting this together, you know, tried to look at where the biggest needs are. That's why we focused on the Corridors of Commerce program and the TED program and the transit plan in the metro area. Frankly, we also kind of looked at what the legislature has considered in recent years, you know, and what the legislature considered last session as kind of a starting point for what's politically feasible in putting together a funding bill. I'm sure we could come up with other revenue sources and other ideas and other ways of doing this, but we wanted it to be somewhat grounded in what it seemed like the legislature was willing to consider. And, you know, we appreciate the fact that the chair has worked, been willing to listen to us and consult us. This is really, at the end of the day, you know, Representative Hornstein's bill. And we respect that, and we want to work with everybody on the committee as much as we can. But we don't have a, I guess I don't have a great answer for that other than we are trying to make progress in a way that we think we can get past.
Okay, and we have a follow-up by Representative Hausman and then one more by a question by Representative Holberg, and then we'll move on. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And specifically to the issue, does everyone pay? And I'm going to zero in specifically on the issue of supporting transit. Does everyone pay?
Ms. Donahoe.
Madam Chair, I guess does everyone pay? In terms of the increase revenue in the bill is basically if for Metro Transit is from the metropolitan area sales tax. I don't know if that's the question that you have. I guess we also look at, you know, the other revenue sources for transit, general fund, motor vehicle sales tax, you know, lots of different revenue sources. But in the bill, that is the increase in the funding for transit in the metropolitan area. For Greater Minnesota, it's a portion of the lease vehicle revenue. But
Representative Hausman, did you have a follow-up?
Later.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your fairness discussions, did you have any discussion around the alternative fuels? We see, in particular, large delivery companies, garbage haulers using natural gas or propane, increased use of electric cars, et cetera. When we asked this question of the Commissioner of Transportation earlier, his response was is that those cars cost more, and in the sales tax and tabs they pay more. Well, with that rationale, you would look at exempting gas tax for luxury cars. It didn't really hold a lot of weight, at least with me. So can you talk to the committee a little bit about this fairness and that they are definitely users of the road system but are not participating because they're not using gas?
Ms. Donahoe.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Holberg, that is an issue that has come up. It wasn't really much something that the Move Minnesota group discussed. From the Alliance perspective, we have suggested that there be a flat annual fee for all electric cars because all electric cars and propane, I think, are the fuels that aren't taxed under the fuel tax. But under this proposal, other fuels, compressed natural gas, liquefied gas, biodiesel, E85, all the other alternative fuels that we have, those taxes would be proportionately increased under this proposal.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your patience there, Mr. Sulam.
No problem. I'm just happy I have a good partner.
Okay. Thank you. You may proceed.
Again, Madam Chair, Ken Sulam with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And Representative Beard, I hope you can stick for just a couple minutes because actually your questions changed my testimony or how I want to present it because we the question gets asked us all the time, you know, what are the people saying? What are the people saying? I accept the fact that I'm not a person anymore, you know, government lawyer who lobbies. I can accept that, you know, that's fine. That's my job. But I represent 9,000 town officers who are real people. I represent 9,000 town officers who I think most of you acknowledge are as close to their citizens as they can possibly be. And they're the ones telling me, pass this bill, pass it now. The people are speaking. This room is full of people besides just hired guns like myself. And I'm in-house. I'm a little different than just your average contract lobbyist. But they are speaking. But they're speaking through their spokespersons. They're speaking through us. They're speaking through their town officers. 529 townships have signed the resolution saying pass this bill this year. That's 200 more than I was able to give you 3 weeks ago at the joint conference. That's 200 more that have sent it in now that they know more about this bill and that we are making progress. Is it a perfect solution addressing every single thing? Well, as Ms. Donahoe said, no. We're not going to address 100% of everything that's out there. But if we don't pass this bill, we're going to do 100% of nothing. And that's a lot worse. And the people are watching. We can't do electioneering. We cannot campaign for you. But I can tell you, if you look at that 2008 bill and actually look at the election, how many lost their seat because the voters voted them out on the override? Some had issues within their internal party. That's a separate battle. I can't weigh in on that. But the people who had the courage to do that override and were on the ballot came back. The voters do pay attention. I can tell you they pay attention to the property tax. 75% property tax dependency at the township level right now. 10 years ago, we were at 50%. What's the number one driving factor in our budgets? Transportation, roads. 56,000 miles of roads. They get product off the farms. They get you to your cabins. They get people to the hunting lands. 56,000 miles of road that are not being rebuilt, and the efforts to try to even just maintain them is getting harder and harder because the revenues aren't there except for property tax. 6,000 bridges on the township system, 421 of which are on the critical deficiency list. Now, we, as I've told you before, we took 60 off the list last year. We put 62 on. We're losing ground without funding for infrastructure. So that's why the people have supported their town officers, and the town officers have supported the association. They're passing these resolutions. We need this bill, and we need it now. Why are we in support of the gross receipts? Because that's the part that comes down to the little guys. We can highlight the big projects. I want to see the big Highway 14 corridors done and corridors of commerce. Absolutely, we support that. But it's this gas tax and the gas tax alternative through the gross receipts that reaches your backyards. The roads, that's the 5% set aside constitutionally dedicated for us. And that's why our members are saying, yes, we need this portion of the bill, and we need it now. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Howe.
And I don't know if you guys are the, Madam Chair, I don't know if these folks are the right people to answer this question, but it looks to me like we've got a diesel equivalent gallon or for propane and for natural compressed natural gas. When the question was asked about the electric car, why is there not a kilowatt equivalent to a gallon? Where is that? There's a lot of smart engineers out there. Where is that calculation? So those folks that are driving those hybrids or those electric cars are paying something into the share.
Do either of you feel comfortable answering that question? Or?
Oh, Madam Chair, I can't answer the specific as to what kilowatt equivalency might be. I'm not an engineer. I don't know that. I can't tell you. that if there's additional sources of revenue that would help people feel, make this bill fairer, that make sure everybody's paying in. My brothers are avid users of the transit because they can't drive. They bike everywhere. They'd be happy to pay a bike registration fee to the state to help pay in. That would actually add to this bill and help us go one step further towards more needs. We've told you we're not getting 100% of need here. We're making a very sustainable dent. If you've got ideas to help us make it even better, let's have it, and bring more revenues in to meet the bigger need, because the need isn't going away. It's only getting larger.
Thank you. Okay, so now we are going to move on to Ms. Dewar, and then on deck is Sherry Munyon and Dave Van Haddam. Did you see? All right. Okay, welcome to the committee, Ms. Dewar. State your name for the record.
Yep, my name is Amanda Dewar, and I'm here representing the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. I'm here to offer the partnership strong support for this funding proposal because it includes ongoing funding of the Corridors of Commerce program. Last session, the Highway 14 Partnership advocated for the creation and initial funding of the Corridors of Commerce program. The program's focus on building capacity and addressing missing links in our corridor system presented an opportunity to finally make progress on long overdue highway expansion projects like Highway 14. Applications for over 120 eligible projects throughout the state were submitted to MnDOT for this initial round of Corridors of Commerce funding of $300 million, of which 10 were selected. And because of the Corridors of Commerce program, meaningful progress is going to be made on Highway 14 in the next few years. However, even after that work is done, there will still be segments in need of expansion to provide a consistent four-lane corridor from Rochester to New Ulm. So you will continue to see our organization in front of this committee until Highway 14 is complete. Southern Minnesota's economy is strong, but we need the infrastructure to support this growth. And as demonstrated by the project requests, there are hundreds of other needed highway improvements across the state. Highways 10, 23, 52, 61, 169, 212, 371, I-94, 494, to name just a few. MnDOT's made it clear that absent additional resources, these projects are going to go unfinished. I also want to quickly compliment the inclusion of an efficiency measure that's included in this bill. The Greater Minnesota Right-of-Way Acquisition Loan Fund could speed up the property acquisition needed for highway projects, improve project readiness for Corridors of Commerce funding. With right-of-way needed for additional expansion on Highway 14 and many other corridors across the state, this program could provide options for moving projects forward. So I urge this committee to pass this bill. The longer we wait to provide the transportation investment that we all know is needed, the more opportunities for economic growth that our state will miss. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dewar. I'm not sure if I see Ms. Munyon in the audience. She may be crossed away, so we will come back to her if she's able to get here before we're done, and we'll go to Mr. Van Haddam. Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Okay. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Dave Van Haddam. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. On behalf of TLC and 10,000 members across the metro and many allied organizations, we strongly support House File 2395. I'm going to cover two things. First, what the metro area sales tax buys, and then why it's so important to make that investment, but all of the investment that's in this bill. So very quickly, you've heard this before, but the metro area sales tax would fund three additional light rail lines, six additional highway bus rapid transit, 12 additional rapid bus lines, a 4% growth in the regular bus system, as well as very critical bike and pedestrian connections, ADA compliance, safe routes to school, a number of things in that active transportation realm. So this bill provides critical funding to build out the metro area transit system. And by that, we mean both metro transit and suburban providers. By doing so, it will greatly enhance the Twin Cities' economic competitiveness, substantially increase access to opportunity, especially for those who need it most, and create a more energy-efficient and sustainable transportation system. Greater MSP tells us that when corporate site selectors come to the Twin Cities, one of their first questions is to see our transit map. And by that, they mean what kind of rail network do we either have in place or will have soon. Right now, our map is woefully behind that of most peer regions. Dallas, Denver, and Salt Lake each has approximately twice the number of light rail and commuter rail miles either built or under construction, as does the Twin Cities. Many other regions have or are well on their way to having a 21st century transit system. Denver, at least partly due to its transit vision and investment, is the number one city that young people are choosing to move to. The recent Itasca Project Return on Investment study of the accelerated build-out of the Metro Transit System found $3 in direct economic benefits for every dollar invested. It's very important to note that the largest share of those benefits are reduced travel time for all commuters across the region, as well as reduced time for moving goods. So this is about economic competitiveness. It's also about expanding opportunity. With the transit build-out, 500,000 more people would be able to get to employers within a reasonable transit commute, under 30 minutes. 50,000 of those folks would be those living in the poorest 20% of the region. These expanded transit options allow people to economize on transportation costs and direct those savings to education, housing, health care, and other priorities. We know that a large share of people choose to use transit where it's conveniently available. For example, in downtown Minneapolis, over 40% commute by bus or train. A recent Met Council survey found that three times as many people want to use transit as currently do so. But the problem is that far too much of our region does not have a convenient transit option. In many suburbs, transit is almost exclusively a couple of commute routes in the morning and back to the two core cities. And in our core cities, far too often service hours don't extend fully enough into the weekends and evenings, and many critical connections are missing. So we need to build the transit ways that CTIB has so successfully advanced since 2008, but we also need to increase that basic bus service by 4%, as I mentioned. Finally, the 3/4 cent sales tax increase for metropolitan area transit that's in this bill brings the total to a full cent. Most of our peer regions also use a sales tax for transit expansion, and at a full cent, we would reach parity with many of these peers. Atlanta, Boston, Cleveland, Dallas, Denver, and Houston are all at a full cent to transit. We'd remain well behind Seattle, which is at 1.8 cents. We'd also remain considerably further behind the vast majority of our global competitors in both transit investment and ridership, transit ridership, on a per capita basis. So to conclude, on behalf of TLC and Move Minnesota, we wholeheartedly support House File 2395. This bill will ensure that all Minnesotans can get where they need to go. Commuters, yes, but also shoppers, seniors, students, those looking for jobs, immigrants, people with disabilities, those with cars who want a choice, and those without cars would all be able to get where they need to go. Finally, the bill makes the smart and urgent investments in our transit and transportation system that will best enhance Minnesota's economic competitiveness and quality of life.
Thank you very much. We do have a question. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you mentioned that this would bring the three commuter lines or LRT lines. Do you know which ones those are?
Madam Chair and Representative Mahoney, right now under the Metropolitan Council plan, the ones that are moving forward are Southwest, Botno, and then an East Metro line. It looks like the most likely place for that East Metro would be the Rush, some combination of the Rush line going north along 35E and West 7th out to the airport. You know, the planning process takes some time to figure out exactly which line, but certainly one of those three is going to be an East Metro light rail.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Mahoney.
So then there would be, what is it, the green line, the blue line, and then two other lines, so there'd be four lines over in the Minneapolis, serving Minneapolis, one a combined St. Paul-Minneapolis line, and one line over in St. Paul.
Madam Chair, Representative,
you don't need to answer. That's just a comment. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Oh, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I just want you to know, I know people are a little tired of me kind of talking about that, but I want people to never forget that there seems to have been a strong build-out of the West Metro area versus the East Metro. And, you know, it gets a little tiring, just like people get tired of me.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Beard.
Representative Mahoney, or Madam Chair, I will never tire of Representative Mahoney. He always makes me think about things and inspires follow-on comments, like the comment we had a little bit ago, the discussion with Ms. Donahoe about how difficult this is, and the fault lines aren't always R and D. Many times there's, even with the metro area, we've got fault lines. And I, not that I'm complaining, but I could just point out that this bill, as it stands at the moment, will suck about $12 million a year out of Scott County. And for the next 10 years, there isn't one transit line drawn to Scott County. It all goes to CTIB to be dispensed other places. So even though we're kind of West Metro, we're kind of far out West Metro, and we have no train lines. We have no BRT on a map. We have nothing like that. But we're being asked to play. We're being asked to play in the pond, so that's why we're having this discussion. Just so you know that this is pretty mixed. You know, Madam Chair, as I see a hand being raised, we could have a transit line running through Scott County. I think it's called Dan Patch, but I'll just leave my comments.
Okay, we have one more question before we go on, and Representative Earhart.
Sorry. Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just saying, think how long we in Hennepin County have watched all the money sucked out of Hennepin County for the rest of the state. Before you worry about that paltry $12
million. Mr. Van Hatt.
If I could respond, Madam Chair and Representative Beard, under the existing CTIB arrangement, Washington County, which didn't in the early years have a transitway, has a guarantee. I can't speak for CTIB, but I think once Scott and Carver are in this joint powers organization, there will be some spending in those counties. I would also feel pretty confident that a number of people will use the Southwest Green Line from Scott County.
Thank you. Okay. The next person is Janelle Waldock, and Fred Corrigan is on deck, followed by, we'll be listening to Leslie Davis' testimony after that. So, okay. Welcome, Ms. Waldock.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Janelle Waldock, and I'm the director of the Center for Prevention at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Move Minnesota Coalition. So you might wonder why Blue Cross is part of a transportation coalition. Simply put, while incorporating physical activity and bike ped options as part of our state's transportation plan is not the total silver bullet for Minnesota's healthcare conundrum, it does need to be a part of the solution. Your colleagues in the Health and Human Services Committee, I'm sure, would echo our sense of urgency on the status of health in Minnesota, particularly the worrying research that estimates that the current generation will have a shorter lifespan than that of their parents. We see working with a diverse group of non-traditional stakeholders advocating for transportation funding not just as critical to job growth and economic competitiveness, but moreover, the overall health of all Minnesotans. At Blue Cross, our goal is to make the healthy choice the easy choice. But for our state, it's really a big challenge. In the last 10 years alone, obesity levels in Minnesota have jumped from 15% in 1995 to 26% in 2012. By 2020, projections suggest the figures will see nearly 1 in 3 Minnesotans classified as obese. The implications of this increase are even starker as an obese population brings with it risks of substantial chronic health problems. The CDC reports risks of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and most cancers. In addition, problems in pregnancy and childbirth are all highest in this population. These problems will add a projected $3.7 billion to Minnesota's annual health care costs by 2020. But the costs do not stop in the healthcare arena. A 2011 Gallup poll estimates that overweight or obese full-time workers in the United States miss over 450 million more days of work each year than healthy workers, costing businesses $153 billion annually in lost productivity. As you can imagine, these are figures that both keep us awake at night, but also drive the work that we do at Blue Cross. The good news is that we already know many of the solutions to curbing this epidemic, and a big part of that is increased physical activity. Health experts at the CDC, the U.S. Surgeon General's Office, and the World Health Organization all agree and recommend physical activity, including walking and biking, to help prevent chronic diseases and improve long-term health. They also recommend that communities and states pass local ordinances that create built environments to encourage that activity. Minnesotans also agree, with 87% of people, both in rural and urban areas, believing that the way a community is built has a big effect on how much physical activity they get. At Blue Cross, we are committed also to capital solutions, such as the Nice Ride Minnesota program that we're the signature sponsor of, that saw over 300,000 rentals in 2013, as well as providing economic vitality with businesses near the Nice Ride Minnesota stations that saw an estimated $150,000 increase in spending over the course of a season. We also support active transportation policy solutions, such as safe routes to school that support improvements to the routes that children use to walk and bike to school, giving them the opportunity to get much-needed physical activity. We strongly support that Minnesota continue its commitment to comprehensive transportation funding by passing House File 2395, including long-term, sustainable funding for bike and walk community connections. The funding amounts for those projects are comparatively small, but such a commitment will underscore our shared quest for healthy Minnesota communities now and in the future. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time today, and I stand ready for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Walda.
Thank you.
Okay. Fred Corrigan. Is he here? Okay. We will move on to Leslie Davis. And then on deck will be Nancy Schuweiler, I believe, and then John Hausladen. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Davis.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Leslie Davis. I woke up 4 o'clock this morning, and I said, this is going to be the day that you get it on the money plan, that I'm going to be able to put it together so that it comes through to you really bright and clear that this is the answer to any of our problems. But first, I'd like to thank Ms. Holberg and Ms. Hausman for responding back to my emails. A lot of times you send an email out and it goes into a black hole. But I got excited today because my tickler alarm went off. I thought it was Bankers Day at the legislature today, so I got excited. And I had a banker's joke for you that I didn't want to waste about the kids in school. And the teacher asked them all to say what their mother does. And one kid says, my mom's a teacher. One's a homemaker. One's a dental hygienist. And one kid says, my mom's a stripper. She works in a bar and she takes off her clothes. And men put money in her panties. Oh, okay. And the bell
disappear. David, I think it would be appropriate if you would just get on to your testimony about the bill. I would appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
And she asked, she said, well, your mother doesn't
that. Excuse me, I would like you to stop and the joke that you're talking about, and I'll move on to your testimony. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll get back my train of thought. Let's go to my handout. You know, I tried to deal with, I'm running for governor in the DFL, and I tried to communicate with Governor Dayton about this, but he communicated with the Tooth Fairy, and the Tooth Fairy doesn't support this, so obviously Mr. Dayton won't. So he doesn't know where money comes from or how it comes into circulation. But I do, and my colleagues do. And let me go over this a moment and tell you how it does. When a bank makes a loan, it simply adds to the borrower's deposit account in the bank by the amount of the loan. The money is not taken from anyone else's deposit. It wasn't previously paid to the bank by anyone. It's new money created by the bank for the use of the borrower. You understand that point? It's really significant that it doesn't come from the Tooth Fairy. It's not a printing press. It's just the bank creating it in their computer for the borrower. They don't go down to the vault and get it or anything like that. To go on here is Mr. Monk, Assistant General International Affairs with the U.S. Treasury, said, the actual creation of money always involves extension of credit by private commercial banks. So I get on to the next page, which is the powers of Minnesota state chartered banks. not Wells Fargo, U.S. banks, but the state chartered banks that are licensed and supervised by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. There's hundreds of them throughout the state, and this is what that relates to. You control the rules under which the state chartered banks operate. The next page points that to you, the Department of Commerce letter. They supervise and examine these state chartered banks, and so does the FDIC. That's the only federal involvement in state chartered banks is the FDIC, not the Federal Reserve, not the Treasury Department. So they supervise and oversee that. And now we get to the money plan.
And then excuse me.
The money plan requires that.
Excuse me, Mr. Davis, will this be related to this bill today?
Say again?
Will your statements be related to this bill today?
Yeah, because this money plan, what you do with the bill that you have is you dump the entire bill and you use this as a replacement amendment for all of it, and it solves all the problems, taxes and roads and bridges and kind of like that. And I'm going to show you exactly how it does it.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Davis. You've had 4 minutes now, and we need to move on to the next testifier.
Well, how come you don't put a time limit on all these other people
that ramble on here?
You know, I had the same situation with the Health and Human Services Committee. Somebody gets up there and they ramble on for the first hour and then a half hour. And then when it comes to other people that have something to say, they get 3 minutes, 1 minute left. Now I'm getting to the gist of the money plan, which is what's going to roll me into office, because other people understand the money plan.
Mr. Davis, Mr. Davis, we can invite you to the committee hearing this evening, and then you can have a couple more minutes if you'd like to finish. Thank you very much.
That's the deal.
Okay.
I'll see you this evening.
Commissioner Showalter.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. And then on deck is John Housladen. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I am Nancy Schuweiler, Dakota County Commissioner for District 4, which is comprised of portions of Eagan, Invergrove Heights, and Rosemount. I am also the legislative lead for the Dakota County Board of Commissioners and a member of the county's Transit Improvement Board. On behalf of the Dakota County Board, I appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts on House File 2395. Dakota County has consistently advocated for and supported an array of transportation funding increases to address important statewide and regional transportation needs that include deteriorating infrastructure, congestion, transit and multimodal alternatives, as well as job growth and economic development. Again, this year, increased transportation funding is a clear need for our state, and the Dakota County Board supports a comprehensive, balanced, and equitable transportation funding bill. However, we have serious concerns about the balance and equity of this bill. First, the bill unevenly addresses the needs of Metro Transit, Greater Minnesota Transit, and highways as identified in the Governor's Transportation Finance Advisory Committee report. Based on our analysis, the bill generates almost 1.5 times of the maximum funding gap identified for Metro Transit needs. The bill generates over 100% of needs identified for Greater Minnesota Transit, with no sales tax at 100% of needs identified for Greater Minnesota Transit, with no sales tax effort required of Greater Minnesota counties for transit funding. The bill generates only about 18% of statewide highway needs and 11% of total county highway needs. And revenue dedicated for metropolitan bike and pedestrian facilities is greater than the new revenue generated for county highways in the 7 metropolitan counties. Second, the bill does not adequately address the needs of suburban counties like Dakota, who will rely heavily on highway investment to meet our transportation needs. We are facing significant growth over the next 20 years, with 100,000 new residents anticipated in Dakota County, resulting in significant transportation challenges. These challenges include county highways that stand in for a very limited trunk highway system. The need for over 30 miles of new county highways to serve developing areas, and over 120 miles of county highways expected to be under capacity by 2030. Dakota County faces a shortfall of $25 million per year to meet our county highway needs. Even as our need for transit increases, the vast majority of new investments in Dakota County will be for highways, including those to support transit in Dakota County, which is likely to run on highways rather than rail. As proposed, House File 2395 is significant and comprehensive, but it is not balanced or equitable. It would reduce the amount of leased motor vehicle sales tax available to suburban counties, including Dakota, in 2016 and beyond from current law, which was utilized in 2008 to help address suburban county highway needs. As proposed, it provides no sales tax revenue for highways, which are vital to support our transit operations. And in total, we'll add more than $60 million in new taxes from Dakota County, yet only about $3.5 million of new county highway funding is guaranteed back to Dakota County.
Commissioner, will you be able to wrap up your remarks?
Yes,
Darlene,
I am. While we recognize the need to support the comprehensive statewide transportation network and regional transit, this bill, as currently drafted, needs some additional work to address Dakota County transportation needs and equity for Dakota County taxpayers. The Dakota County Board urges your support for amendments to the bill that are consistent with our adopted position, which includes dedication of the leased vehicle sales tax for transportation with at least 50% of the total proceeds directed to suburban counties for highway purposes, placing at least 0.25% of any new sales tax under the control of the individual metropolitan county boards for transportation purposes, including highways. Dakota County stepped forward and took a tough vote to join CTIB and help fund transit in the metro region. Yet only the five CTIB counties have not been granted the authority to collect a locally controlled sales tax. We further urge you to support an amendment to the bill which provides authority for the CTIB counties to enact a local option sales tax for transportation in the same manner as the 82 non-CTIB counties. Such an amendment would give Dakota County and other CTIB counties the same authority for locally controlled transportation funding that the 82 non-CTIB counties have.
Excuse me, Commissioner, we do have a question for our committee.
Sure.
I will take that from Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I know I want to thank Commissioner Showalter for her testimony and just for the committee's edification to point out two things. One is I'll be giving many of these comments again tomorrow when I offer the A-12 amendment to the bill when we get around to amendments tomorrow morning, because it's important to note that not all counties in the metro area are created equal or have developed equally. Ms. Showalter, Commissioner Showalter, has made the point that transit in many of our counties actually depends on roads and bridges. And we are very fond of the transit system that we've been able to develop in Scott County in particular. I'm sure Dakota is proud of theirs. In fact, Scott County Transit will be joining, I believe, shortly Minnesota Valley as we continue to economize and use the dollars more effectively. But members, the issue that she pointed out that I just wanted to underscore is transit in many areas of the metro area depends on roads and bridges. And the way the bill is constructed now, we are precluded from spending any of the new money on roads and bridges unless we do the gas tax. And that's why my amendment will address some of that tomorrow. Perhaps there's another amendment that could address the additional concerns that Commissioner Showalter's raised. But at the end of the day, unless we can cross a river on a bridge that isn't a bottleneck and have more bridges, which I'm very fond of, and bridges get built by people who can make a good living building bridges, because at the end of the day, bridges across rivers connect us, keep us accessible. And oh, by the way, did I mention that our bus service runs on bridges, and it depends on lane miles and bridges. I think I've made my point, Madam Chair. Thank you for letting me comment on Ms. Showalter's testimony.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, may I conclude?
Could you do it in 20 seconds? And then you may.
Okay. We strongly encourage further work on this important transportation legislation to better provide balance and equity. We firmly believe that inclusion of our board-supported provisions can help address transportation needs across all modes and equitably serve transportation users in all areas of the state. Thank you for this opportunity, and I will stand for any further questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We have one more testifier that we're going to be able to get through today. We will what's that? Excuse me. Yeah, we're going to come. Oh, I shouldn't say today. I should say now. We're going to be coming back tonight at 7 o'clock, and I will. Okay, we'll verify that time. And I would like to welcome Mr. Hausladen.
Thank
our
you.
Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen. I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We represent over 680 motor carriers and their allied vendors across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on HF 2395. And like the members of this committee, the Minnesota trucking companies that I represent do care deeply about Minnesota's roads and bridges. And we have always paid our fair share, and we are willing to continue to do so. And I want to stress that as the payers, we are the ones who have to figure out what can be absorbed and what can be passed along. And so this means we do have strong opinions regarding the best way to collect those funds. Now, these opinions stem from our status as really just small businesses on wheels. You know, most trucking companies today still are family-owned. They have 20 trucks or fewer, and they drive across multiple jurisdictions. And with freight rates quoted by the cents per mile, trucking truly is a business of counting pennies. And most of these small businesses have margins of only 2 or 3%. I want to be clear that the Minnesota Trucking Association does support an increase in transportation funding, but through existing mechanisms. And to that end, we do support an increase in the state fuel tax, but we do oppose the creation of a gross receipts tax. We believe the fuel tax is the best mechanism because it is scalable. You can increase it to meet the need. It is predictable. The assessment can be known in advance, and it does not change. It is reciprocal. States can net out proceeds to each based on gallons purchased and miles driven in each state. It is transparent, and that payers know the cost and where it is used. It is efficient. It collects all the money due, and then it spends little on administration, and finally, it's accountable. Rates and those who set them are subject to the vote of the people. So we believe the gross receipts tax misses on at least three of these measures: predictable, reciprocal, and transparent, and that's why we oppose that measure. So we do look forward to working together on building a stronger transportation system for Minnesota. And again, if the conversation is about raising the fuel tax, I'm happy to come back and talk about that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to verify the time that we will be reconvening at 7 and what room number in, oh, well, it's not there, but that's a 10 a.m. one. So everyone who is on, it's 6 p.m. in room 300 South. Now, the rest of the testifiers, is everybody able to come back this evening? It's 6 p.m., 300 South. We have one person saying they're not able to. If you could give us your brief testimony, we would like to take that. Representative Hausman?
We're just quickly, I don't know if you're aware, it sounds like both the Republican and Democratic caucuses are meeting at 5:45.
Okay, then we'll do 7? Okay. Yeah. We're going to make an executive decision here and say let's meet at 7 in room 300 South. Okay. Thank you for your patience, and I will let you say your name for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I'd have my kids with me here tonight if I had to. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you being allowing me to speak. I am Steve Bott. I'm the chair of the I-94 Coalition, and I'm also the president of the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. And mostly, you've got a packet before you. I want to just thank you and advocate for continued program expansion and funding for the Corridors of Commerce and also the TED program. In representing 94, you were able to, a year ago when I first heard the words Corridors of Commerce, come up with a very feasible program and plan that was able to quantify return on investment. And for our coalition and for 94 and a lot of the other cities that are able to benefit from that program, those can quantify in the project that was a bite-sized piece for us. We're not done yet, but for that bite-sized piece, you're able to get right on 94, 4,000 hours per year of relief for the citizens and businesses of Minnesota. That's a large number per year when you try to do the math. I'm an engineer, so I like to do the nerdy math. The other thing, 7,500 commercial vehicles a day travel that route. It's only growing. And this project and this program is a great one that is able to put numbers and return on investment to that. My last point on that would be businesses. As we heard from the Trucking Association, and one of our businesses along the corridor all the way in St. Cloud, Golden Pump, was able to quantify that they lose $250,000 every year on 94 due to the congestions and the problems. So expand that on the whole corridor, and it's very significant. So with that, I appreciate your time. I just wanted to summarize and thank you for the program, encourage its expansion, and continued success for that for our coalition and a lot of the other important projects throughout Minnesota. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Not a question here, but I'm just struck by we only, and maybe they left already, but we only had two other names, I think. Is there any way, because they've waited through all of this time? I mean, it sounds
we have additional names on the list as well.
Other than those two
right, yes,
names that we had.
Right.
Just hate to think that if they're all brief, that we might.
Oh, we're stuck here, man. Why not them too?
Equity.
Okay, I'm taking directions from our fearless leader, the chair, and what he'd like to do. So we are going to reconvene at 7 p.m. tonight in room 300 South. Right. And we're going to recess the committee. Thank you. We're going to call the committee to order. And welcome back to our committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We missed you while you were gone, and are pleased you're back to be able to hear the rest of the testimony this evening. So would you, do you have any comments to make?
No, thank you. Just apologies again to the committee. My hearing in public safety went a bit longer than I thought it would. So, but I heard you had some good testimony, and I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of it tonight.
Thank you. Okay, so Bentley Graves is up now, and then we also have Kevin, and I believe it's Toma, that is on deck. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for allowing me to testify before you this evening. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber represents 2,300 businesses statewide, with roughly half in the metro area and the other half located in greater Minnesota. We represent businesses of all sizes based in Minnesota, from Fortune 500 companies to sole proprietors. And over 80% of our membership is small and mid-sized companies with 100 employees or less. The business community has a strong interest in the development and preservation of a reliable, multimodal transportation system in Minnesota. Businesses recognize that. So in 2006, we led the Vote Yes campaign to dedicate the receipts of the motor vehicle sales tax to transportation. And in 2008, we supported the 10-year, $6.6 billion funding plan over Governor Plenty's veto. A key to our support for that significant investment was a provision that established the Transportation Strategic Management and Operations Advisory Task Force. And we were pleased and encouraged in 2009 when the task force released a report with several recommendations. Until recently, however, it's been difficult to determine what progress, if any, has been made on implementing the task force's recommendations, even as calls for new investment in Minnesota's transportation system have increased. Our members do not support additional increases in highway revenue streams or an expansion of sales taxes at this time. They strongly believe that the state's first priority on transportation should be measurable progress and results on the efficient use of transportation investments before any additional taxes and revenues are raised. The issue of efficiency was also a focus of Governor Dayton's Transportation Finance Advisory Committee. In its December 2012 report, TFAC stated that, quote, the committee did not recommend funding for 100% of the need identified. Instead, it challenged all transportation providers and the state to address a portion of those needs by working more efficiently and effectively, being innovative in solutions and operations, and using technology to produce a higher quality product. TFAC identified a funding gap of about 15% that it said could and should be closed by efficiencies, including innovations in materials, design, and construction. We believe that this 15% efficiency target is an appropriate and reasonable standard. Last week, Representative Beard introduced House File 3065 to establish this 15% measure as an ongoing expectation for both MnDOT and the Met Council. The bill would also require that the savings realized from this work to meet this efficiency goal be reinvested in the transportation system in a transparent manner, so we can see not only whether the work on efficiencies is generating savings, but also what additional investment is being completed around the state as a result. We know that work on efficiencies is an ongoing concern for MnDOT and the Met Council, but a clear, substantive, and time-specific measure must be applied to this work. The 15% measure identified by TFAC and established in House File 3065, Representative Beard's legislation, can serve this purpose in both the short and long term. We understand that efficiencies cannot alone address the long-term transportation needs of the state. But as TFAC very clearly pointed out, the long-term need cannot be met without significant progress on efficiencies. We believe it's important to lay the groundwork now for future investment, and we can do this through a renewed focus on ensuring the dollars currently being invested in transportation are being spent as efficiently as possible. And we believe this must be the first step before discussing new revenue. Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I want to thank Chairman Hornstein for continuing this conversation with us at the Chamber about the issue of efficiencies, and also want to thank Commissioner Zelli and the leadership of the Met Council about engaging with us on this topic as well. With that, I will be happy to answer any questions you have, but thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Representative Mehta.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Mr. Leslie, I was just wondering, I'm curious. When we tax as a government, we all want the money to be spent efficiently. And if you agree that we have a transportation problem, which by the sounds of it, you do, is that correct?
Yeah, I think Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Graves.
What we have heard from our members is that before discussing new revenue, we need to make sure that the revenues that are currently being invested are used as efficiently as possible, so that when we do get to the point of discussing new revenue, we have an assurance that, you know, that money is going to be invested well.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mehta? Okay.
So I'm curious if this discussion has been taking place longer than I've been here. I think Chairman Earhart remembers the last big coup d'etat. I think what I'd like to know from you is, what's the dollar amount in investment that you think we need to make today? Is it a $500 million investment, $250 million, $100 million in this biennium?
Mr.
Madam Chair, Representative, if you were to apply this 15% measure, basically what TVEC said is that over the course of 20 years, this should be applied. And roughly, you know, rough calculations, that works out to about $100 million a year in efficiencies. And I think our members see that as a good start.
And so you're saying that you don't agree with... Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're saying you don't want to spend money now in any form of new revenue to help your businesses grow?
Well, we have... Madam Chair, Representative. What we've heard very clearly from our members is that before we discuss new revenue, they would like to see real, clear progress on efficiencies. So they have an assurance that the money that's currently being invested that we help get invested in the system in 2008 and in 2006... is being stretched as far as possible.
Representative Mehta?
One more follow-up.
Okay.
I guess then, so basically what I'm hearing is you're you're counting on future savings and zero investment now to fix everything.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Graves.
What we are proposing, again, is that through this focus on efficiencies, we can not only, it's not a focus on efficiencies for efficiency's sake, it's a focus on efficiencies if for no other reason than to ensure that additional dollars are finding their way to projects around the state to supplement the work that's already been done.
And so if that were asked in a yes or no, how would you answer that?
Mr. Graves, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure the question. The answer, I guess, if you were asking, does the chamber currently support additional revenue, the answer is no. I think I made that, hopefully made that clear in my statement. If not, I apologize. And that is what we have heard very clearly from our members.
Okay, we have Representative Earhart and then Representative Beard with questions. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, if I remember the TFAC report, the governor didn't pay any attention to it as to how the money might be raised. So I see no reason why we should hold him accountable for not paying attention to something about efficiencies in the report. He just dismissed the report, like many governors do when they create a commission to find out something or other for them, and then they discover they don't like the hearing, what the hearing that they held and the studies they did, they don't like that, so they dismiss it. And I got the feeling that he probably didn't care any more for the efficiency that you were suggesting than the way that we had to raise money, which was raise the gas tax for 40 cents over 20 or 19 years or 20 years. So I don't think that that's a good argument that you're using, that that's a good source of why we should do efficiencies. But I would like to ask you a question. What I've never heard the chamber suggest that they think that there might be a problem with funding our transportation system. And can you tell me if they have any semblance of any kind of sense about repairing and improving our transportation system? Does the chamber have any sort of idea what they might do besides 15% of efficiencies on nothing?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, as I said in my testimony, I mean, transportation is an important issue for our members. I think we've demonstrated that both in 2006 and 2008. Again, part of that in 2008 was this idea that we were going to see increased focus on efficiencies that hasn't materialized. I think what we've heard from our members is that there is a need to focus on that first, and that by doing that, we can increase the amount of money that's available in the system to go to projects to address, issues within the system.
Well, Madam Chair, I think I'm asking if they can come up with any kind of money, $500,000, $5 billion. What kind of analysis have they done that would indicate that if we even had a benchmark from them that we ought to try and raise X amount because the roads are in bad shape, bridges are falling down? What are you doing about that? Instead of just saying 15% efficiencies of what? 15% on $2 billion that we might get a suggestion from you about what we should be spending? Where are we?
Mr. Graves?
Madam Chair, Representative, in Representative Beer's bill, the 15% for MnDOT is a 15% of an average of the previous 3 years' construction budget. But as I said again, in the way that TFAC laid this out, it amounted to about $100 million a year that we needed to find inefficiencies to get to the kind of system outlined in their recommendations.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Earhart.
In the first place, those construction budgets that you've been looking at are all in quotes constrained. They don't tell what really we need to do. They're put out by the political arm of the MnDOT, who happened to be Sorrell at the time, who was constraining everything. So how can we suggest that whatever has happened in the past is a good benchmark for the future? What we ought to be doing is putting a plan forth, with your help, and determining what we need and then try to achieve it. Wouldn't that be a normal way of putting a project forth?
Mr. Graves.
And we are not hearing that from you.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, you're hearing from us, again, Representative, what we have heard from our members, which is a desire to see real, measurable progress on the efficiencies front.
Well, Madam Chair, they should go out and drive some of the streets around the metro area and see how they feel about constraining things now, or that we don't need new monies and we don't need this and that. I think if they do that instead of sitting in their offices and complaining, that we have a different figure from you. We might even have a figure. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm amazed at how short some of our memories are around here, Representative Earhart. Some of us weren't here, I'm thinking Representative Metz's line of questioning, whenever we lived through two episodes with the Chamber and the Business Partnership and the Itasca Group, lining up behind, first of all, the motor vehicle sales tax constitutional amendment, which some of us opposed the way it was written, and I think Representative Earhart had a hand in writing that. No more than 60% of that money can go to roads and bridges. No less than 40 can go to transit. That was the best deal we were going to get, and I know the Chamber parted company with our caucus in backing the motor vehicle sales tax because they knew what it was we were going to need, and at least we get something for the highway department, and maybe the transit folks would get something that was supposed to be sustainable and reliable and stable. Remember that discussion? And then again in 2008, in a very bizarre and awkward and painful time for some of us, the Chamber actually parted company again with the governor, who would be a natural ally, and said, no, we need to override this veto, and we're looking for some things to get it. They actually partnered, Representative Earhart, with you and with some others to make sure that they put their muscle behind it because they knew what was needed. And I think that bill was to be a 10-year plan, $600 million a year for 10 years, $6 billion to save our crumbling infrastructure. That was the odd box we found ourselves in. They spent a lot of political capital, some of us did, getting a 10-year plan done. And oh, by the way, we're just starting year six of the 10-year plan. And we're already back to the table saying, it's not enough, it's not sustainable, we need more. So I can't believe we're assailing somebody who had just been your ally just a few short years ago, making this happen and overriding the governor's veto to make $600 million a year of new revenue possible. Part of the thing they asked for, members, and I think it was a very reasonable request, was that if we're going to squeeze this out of the taxpayers and put it into the system, how about we have some efficiencies applied to it? And I think there were five things on the list. We got one, a partial report that comes out once a year, and so they've come back and asked for another one. Now, the House file that Mr. Graves is referring to is not what's up here for discussion tonight. What's up here for discussion tonight is a $750 million a year tax increase that we're being asked to support again, and I think it's only reasonable that people that are driving the economic engine of this state, and oh, by the way, they know very well what the investment's going to be, actually get a chance to say, is it reasonable for us to see if we can just squeeze a couple of points a year in efficiencies out of what now amounts to almost $2.6 billion, I think, a year in Chair Hornstein's last budget? I think it's more than reasonable. Members, and I'm just a little taken aback by the line of questioning from my colleague from Edina, who seems to have forgotten how much capital this group in particular spent over the last two episodes, and now that they have the temerity to say, time out, where's our efficiencies, we're getting all exercised about it, I guess is the polite way to say it, Madam Chair. So I just wanted to get that off my chest, that I'm not paid for by the Chamber. I am standing up for the poor benighted taxpayers, though. They're being asked to be squeezed again on this, and I think it's only fair that we just ask the question. No more support until we see some movement on some efficiencies, and I think that's a reasonable thing to ask for. Thank you for letting me vent, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Beard. And since Representative Earhart's name was called, I will call on you right now.
I was just going to, Madam Chair, reply to...
That's what I'm allowing you to do.
...misinformation that he just laid out to you.
Okay, Representative Earhart.
Thank you. First of all, there was no increase in money in the... no increase in taxes in the 05 bill.
That's true.
It was a shift of money, and of course the Chamber was wild about that, and they even tried to raise some money and shepherd that thing through because they didn't have to raise any taxes. Plenty had vetoed the raise in revenue, and this was a shift from the general fund, as you know.
Yep.
Right? And it did finally get in the proper place in the coffers of the transportation department and the spending. In the second place, the chamber came in at the ninth hour on the 08 bill by a call to the speaker, who then was Margaret Anderson Kelleher. After they saw the landslide coming, or the proper vote, they decided that they would get on board. As a matter of fact, I don't think they did anything for the vote, except that they said they would now support it. They certainly didn't support me after the vote was taken. The only one I know they supported was Abler, and they may have done someone else, maybe the guy from southern Minnesota. I don't think so. I think the only one they supported in some degree was Abler, and he managed to survive. Of course, his charm and good looks also helped that. But they have never really come forth with any strong feelings about helping any kind of an increase in taxes that I know of, on anything, as a matter of fact. And if you can figure out something about what I just said that's wrong, let me know. I never saw them anywhere asking for new revenue. And they did not do it at that time until the last minute. And I think that, as a matter of fact, if I remember the story, David Olson got castigated by his some of his members for saying that we'll go along with this. But that's only a little history that I remember. So,
okay, we have three people left for asking questions as members, and then we'll move on to our next testifier, and that is Representative Metza, Mason, and Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Mr. Davis, I know working with the Pentagon is not always easy. It's Graves. I'm sorry. I was reading long line here. I'm not arguing Representative Beard's points about efficiencies. I think efficiencies can always be made. What I am going to argue, though, is much like any of your companies who go out to look for revenue and making a new investment into a new product line or any of those, they go to their shareholders and or try to sell the idea to people to get them to invest, much like we ask people to pay a little bit more in taxes here. And what I can't figure out is why you aren't supporting some type of investment and or some kind of movement to create new revenue, because if we want to grow and expand our economy in this state, we need to make investments and look towards the future, and you can't do that with just efficiencies.
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative Metz, I guess to answer your question, the reason why we're not is because that's not what we're hearing from our membership. Every summer we survey not just our members but the broader business community. One of the questions that we asked was, do you think that we should be increasing? Do we need to increase revenues? 70% said no, and only 8% when specifically asked, what about for something very specific like transportation? Only 8% said yes. So, to answer your question, I think our members, to Representative Earhart's point and Representative Beard's, our members were very engaged in 2008. The chamber was very engaged in 2008. And again, part of that was the idea that we were going to have a focus on efficiencies that we haven't yet seen fully materialize. And until that happens, our members have made it very clear that they have they're not interested in increasing revenues.
Okay, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess with companies like Walmart, I would look at them as one of the largest publicly subsidized companies in the country. Can't even pay their employees enough to eat. They're doing fundraisers and food drives, or I should say food drives specifically this year for their employees. And then, in my district, I had our chamber come in, and they were actually asking last year for transit investment. So I guess I'll just leave you with, I think you guys need to go back to the drawing board and figure out something so you can help us come up with a solution that works.
Mr. Graves, I think he was just, making a comment. So okay. I think we'll go on to Representative Mason, if you don't mind. Okay, Representative Mason.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Graves.
You're next.
Do you have any specific efficiencies in mind that we should be looking for or asking about?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think efficiencies can come in a lot of kind of shapes and sizes. You know, there are some things that, MnDOT, you know, if, for example, is already doing, although one of the things that we would like to see is some ability to quantify that. But, you know, they're working on things like shared service centers. They're making changes to their, cost estimating program and their project management programs. We think that there may be opportunities for things in their eminent domain and right-of-way acquisition in their permitting. But one of the things that we're also doing is we're sitting down with Commissioner Zelli and his senior staff with some of our members who have expertise in things like accounting and project management and project delivery, and trying to find those things from their expertise in the private sector that might be helpful and useful to MnDOT in becoming more efficient. And we are we're beginning that same conversation with the MAC Council as well about, you know, some of the things that they're doing to already maintain efficiencies and how they track that, how those savings are reinvested. And so, you know, I think it can be a lot of different things. We haven't come to this conversation with a prescriptive list. We see our role more is being productive and kind of, again, helping to lay out the target and facilitating the conversation again with among other things, expertise from our members about maybe how we can help.
Representative Mason.
Madam Chair, okay, so basically I did write down project management programs and shared programs, et cetera. So that's what you think I should be asking MnDOT to look at?
Well, I think things along those lines, yes. You know, I mentioned in 2008 the task force that was set up to look at efficiencies, and as Representative Beer pointed out, there was a number of recommendations that were made. And quite frankly, it was very difficult over the intervening years to determine what, if any, progress was made. Now, again, to Commissioner Gazzelli's great credit and that of his senior staff, in the last few months, we have begun to see some reporting from them about what things they have done. Again, you know, including that is this idea of shared service centers and talking about some of the work they're doing on their cost estimating project management. But what we haven't yet been able to get to with them is a way to quantify that. You know, we've done this, and we've saved this money, and it was reinvested in the system here. And that is, I think, in particular what our members are looking for. Again, you know, what they've said is they'd like to see not just clear measurable progress on the efficiencies, but some way, again, to measure that and keep track as to whether or not we're actually making progress.
Okay, thank you. And then just one thing.
Okay, Representative Mason.
My experience on City Council is a lot different in dealing with some of the chamber members than it is as a legislator dealing with the state chamber. And I can think of a number of projects where it was a combination of the city, of the businesses, of, you know, various chambers and pulling in extra people to get the desired outcome that we wanted. And I, as my colleague to the left said, we're not seeing a lot of that, at least recently. So I definitely would appreciate more interaction and more specific help. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I typically just whine in here, so I've got a couple of questions. I'm going to be different tonight. You asked for 15% efficiencies, and then say you don't have a prescriptive list. But so far I've heard, you know, engineering, project management, purchasing. I think I've heard you say materials. There must have been, I mean, if you had efficiencies that you were looking for, 15% efficiencies, back when we passed the last gas tax, which actually the chamber did have something to do with that. They came in and said they'd support it if we halved it, rather than do, I think it was 10 cents or whatever. So long as we cut it in half, they'd support it. And that was one piece that they did support. But so if you were looking for 15% efficiencies, you had to have some idea what you were looking for. I mean, what were your goals? Where were you you trying to attain the goal of 15%? I mean, was it material? Was it labor? Was it what?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, in
2008.
In 2008, it was a general discussion about, with new investment, we should do what we can to make the most efficient use of that money possible. And so part of the 2008 bill was, again, this task force. The task force was part of the bill. And so the task force was tasked with going and studying this problem with MnDOT and trying to figure out what sorts of things could be done. And again, as a result of that, came back several recommendations that had to do with, you know, everything from, is MnDOT too decentralized, to do they have a reliable continuous improvement process in place throughout their operations, to more specific things. And so those recommendations that has been difficult, again, to figure out what specifically had been done and what progress had been made, again, until recently. And again, to his credit, to Commissioner Zelli's credit, and to his staff, you know, they have been able to now kind of give us a sense of what has been done since 2008 on those various recommendations. But what they haven't been able to do is to determine or to kind of explain and quantify that work in any way. So, you know, they can give us a list of things that have been done, but they can't tell us, you know, we did this and it made us more efficient because we know it saved us money and that money was reinvested in the system. So in 2008, it was, you know, more of a general conversation and the idea that, you know, if we're going to invest new money, we should be able to stretch it as well. And I think it's been a bit of an ongoing process to nail down what that has happened.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Okay, I have two other questions, so I'll just state them at the same time. You had a governor that was probably, I don't want to say Governor Dayton is at all unfriendly to the chamber. I mean, he's advocating for repeal of a number of taxes this year. But I suspect Governor Pawlenty was probably a little bit more friendly. I know he was certainly more friendly than I am typically with the chamber. I'll just use myself. Why didn't you get better answers back then? Because you actually had, you know, somebody that was supposed to be your good friend, and you didn't get those answers, you didn't get those efficiencies, or even start on them, apparently, until Commissioner Zelli showed up. So could you answer that? But I'll just ask that question. I got one other one after that.
Okay, Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know that I can answer. I wasn't here. I actually am fairly new to the chamber, so I don't know that I can answer that question.
So I get a fresh start with somebody good.
That's right.
Unless it's by reputation.
Representative Mahoney, only your final question in this?
Yes. What happens if you don't get your 15%? What happens if we only get the 10%? So you'll never support any kind of revenue increase?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know that I can definitively answer that question either. I know what our expectations are, and that is something that's been laid out pretty clearly by our membership, and they've asked us to pursue that before new revenue.
Okay. And I did tell you we had like three people left, but in the meantime, I had Representative Petersburg, who would like to ask the final question to our testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would really like to get back to the discussion about efficiency and why maybe if requesting or thinking about the need for efficiency might not be a good idea, and I think it is a good idea. I was going to give a reference to farming, but I think business climate is probably something more that we all understand. But if we can imagine a business that has been in business for a while and it is making a particular widget, process, whatever, for many years, and now all of a sudden they can't make ends meet because they don't have enough revenue in order to produce it, and government has dictated exactly what the dollars that they can get is, and they went to the bank to get some more funding in order to be able to stay in business. I don't think any of us would expect the bank to give them more dollars without them coming up with some sort of plan of being more efficient or having a different business plan. I don't think they would accept, well, business as usual, we'll continue to do the same old, but you just give us more money and we'll do better next time. And it sounds like in 2008, that's exactly what was asked of them, was that we have more efficiencies, and yeah, we're going to support giving more dollars so that we can enhance and multiply the outcome of those extra dollars. Here, again, it looks like because of we weren't able to get those efficiencies for whatever reason, we're sitting in a situation where we have now actually done less work for more dollars than we were anticipating. And so I think it is reasonable for us to ask before more money is invested or that we at least have some sort of plan on how we're going to do something better than business as usual so that we can tell the taxpayers, hey, we're actually getting better at what we're doing and not just doing the same old. And so it seems reasonable that we should ask for some sort of efficiencies and improvements. And this is my comment. Madam Chair,
thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, if the chamber doesn't have specific efficiencies identified, how did they come up with the 15% efficiency goal? You know,
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, as I mentioned in my testimony, that measure came from TFAC. I mean, TFAC said, given the needs the state has over the next 20 years, we cannot meet those needs if we do not hit this efficiency target.
So, follow up, Representative Sundin?
So in essence, no, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it there. Thank
okay.
you.
Well, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Graves. We are now going to move on to Kevin Toma with Sherry Munyon on deck. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Toma. You can state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. I'm here tonight to share some concerns our association has about the gross receipts tax. We are the licensed wholesale petroleum distributors here in Minnesota. Our members are the ones who are responsible for collecting and remitting the state's gas tax to revenue. We'd like to talk about the cost of the new gross receipts tax, and the page is passing out a sheet as we speak. I'd like to let you know that the Minnesota current gas tax is 25 cents per gallon, and the debt service charge rate for the trunk highway bonds is 3.5 cents. The total of the tax and the surcharge for gasoline is 28.5 cents. If you look at the chart above the handout that I just handed, that was just distributed, you see a starred number there. And that starred number is the annual Minnesota total all grades wholesale gasoline price by refiners for the previous fiscal year as published by the United States Energy Information Administration, and that is on line 4.12 of the bill. So we are talking about the number that we're actually going to use when we make the calculation for the next year's annual tax that will be applied to the wholesale sales. As you can see, that number is $2.847. And if you multiply that by 5%, you're going to end up with 14.23 cents. That's what the new gross receipts based on this model would be. Now, we're basing this on model year 2012 because the model year 2013 isn't available on the website yet. So that would be the previous year. So if it were in effect today, in essence, that would be the number that we would be looking at adding.
Okay? Thank you.
Okay. If you add the current state rate of 28.5 cents and the new tax rate, which is going to be rounded to the tenth, 14.2 cents, you'll end up with 42.7 cents. And at 42.7 cents, Minnesota will move from the 21st ranked state in the union as far as gas tax to the 6th ranked state, according to House Research Survey on state and local government taxes.
Okay. Are you going to add more to your testimony? You have another minute left.
Go
ahead.
Yep. We're concerned that this is statutorily dedicated and not constitutionally dedicated, and the range in the bill also concerns the conversion can range from 10 cents to an unlimited number, and our members believe that it's a good idea to have conversations about taxes and transportation needs going forward. Thank you,
Mr. Toma. Okay, appreciate your... Oh, we have Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering that I think I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 states that now have sales tax on fuel. How can we, if they have a sales tax, it may be slightly different, but why we move so high when they've already moved up? I gave you the states if you would like.
Mr. Toma.
Madam Chair and Representative, I compared the rankings in the House Research Short Subjects Survey of Study in Local Government Gas Taxes. That's where I took the numbers from.
Is that,
Representative
Madam Chair, the sheet that you handed out?
No, sir. I could provide it to you now if you'd like it.
You didn't show us that.
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, Representative, the statement was made that I based that on the House research that I received.
Representative
And I could share it with you.
Well, Madam Chair, it would be very important to things that you're quoting from to share, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So we can see how efficient they were.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Sherry Munyon is up next, and then up on deck will be Matt Hughes and Lance Klatt. Ms. Munyon, you weren't here at the earlier today, but we're trying to keep our testifiers to 4 minutes, if you could, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, or good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for putting me on the evening agenda. Sorry I missed my space earlier today. My name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. The Minnesota Public Transit Association represents transit providers throughout the state of Minnesota. There are about 15 members in the metro area and 54 members serving citizens in greater Minnesota. We are here in strong support of House File 2395 as introduced. This legislation will provide the level of ongoing funding needed for both the metropolitan area transit as well as greater Minnesota transit. For the metropolitan area, the proposed 3/4 cent sales tax increase will provide a stable dedicated revenue to meet the needs of both expanding the bus service in the region by approximately 4%, as well as helping meet the needs of our core and suburban cities, and also continue building out the transit network. For greater Minnesota, the revenue provided with 70% of the leased vehicle revenue will be deposited into the transit account and go a significantly long way towards reducing the funding gap, which has been estimated by MnDOT at $45 million a year for the next 20 years. Some facts to keep in mind. There are 2.9 million people in the metropolitan area, 7 counties. There are 2.5 million people in greater Minnesota. 47.8% of the motor vehicle sales tax is paid by residents of greater Minnesota. In 2013, only 13% of total transit funding was allocated to greater Minnesota. 2.5 million people, 80 counties, 13% of the transit funding. The metropolitan area's state operating budget state share funds were $224.5 million. Greater Minnesota Transit state share of funding, $33 million. One of the things that I handed out for you to review today is that we do have a statutory requirement for Greater Minnesota transit operators to meet a minimum share of local investment. And depending on whether it's a small transit system or a larger urban system, it's either 15% required local share or 20% local share. On the chart below that, you will see that the local communities outside of the metropolitan area are making significant investments. In 2011, it was 30% of the local share, not 15 or 20. The average was 30. In 2012, that increased to 33%. Those local communities throughout Greater Minnesota have been trying to pick up the slack for the lack of state investment. In fact, Olmsted County passed the quarter-cent sales tax to help meet their transit needs. We're here to advocate that all taxpayers across the state deserve a basic level of mobility. We still have communities in Greater Minnesota who have very limited transit service, such as Wilkin County, who was just added, but they have one municipal service, Breckenridge, in that county. Minnesota residents outside of the metropolitan area need transit services for work, school, medical appointments, social activities, just the same as residents in the metropolitan area. In 2012, if general fund dollars would have been equitably appropriated, the funding for Greater Minnesota Transit from the general fund would have doubled. If the motor vehicle sales tax revenue had been equitably appropriated, the split would not have been 36-4, it would have been 22-18. So we, again, strongly support the package in front of you. We think it serves Minnesota residents very well. It's not only good for transit users throughout the state of Minnesota, but it's good for roads, bridges, bicycle, and pedestrian connections. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, appreciate your testimony. Now we're up with Matt. Oh, excuse me. Representative Mason has a question, so you might want to stay, Ms. Munyon. Ms. Munyon, just wait just a second. Representative Mason?
Madam Chair, Ms. Munyon, I just have one question. You had used the figure 70-30, and the figures that you're using for metro area 2.9 and versus 2.5 for Greater Minnesota, so that's pretty close to being equal. So why would we want the 70? Why would you support the 70-30?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Mason. The reason that MIPTA is supporting a split of 70-30, not 50-50, goes back to the entire funding package. What is distributed to Greater Minnesota Transit? So if you looked in isolation at lease vehicle revenue, then you might be considering 50-50 the appropriate split. However, if you were going to look at that in isolation, then you'd go back and ask the question, when MVEST was split, why wasn't that split equitably by population?
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I remember not too long ago, and maybe even now, that Greater Minnesota was not very interested in transit. In fact, I remember one of our leaders, Speaker Swigum, used to say, if they want transit out here, give them another horse. So that's been the attitude for a long time. Give them another horse for transit. That's been the attitude out in rural Minnesota for a long time. And they that's one of the problems with getting Greater Minnesota to vote for transit when it's in any kind of a package. Transit, I mean, it's got to be bus or train, I guess, or rail, I mean, in today's world. I think that's what we mean by transit. Bus or maybe there's another kind, but not horses. So I'm trying to figure out what's the change in attitude that we need more money. Somebody out there is calling for transit. Rural Minnesota must be getting to like transit, but not their legislators, not their representatives particularly. So who is out there that really wants more money for transit so they can develop their transit systems?
Ms. Munyon?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the citizens, the elected officials in Greater Minnesota have made great strides on this issue. I think if you go back a decade and you look at Greater Minnesota Transit, it was considered a social service. It took people to the doctor, and it was mostly run by volunteers. People weren't very interested. In fact, many of those decisions are still made under Health and Human Services rather than under local transportation departments. So there is a little disconnect. 60% of the revenue that's distributed for Greater Minnesota Transit goes to the large urban areas. We have college campuses. We have a lot of students who depend on transit to get around those communities. And in other communities where at one time it was a social service, it's become an economic development issue. If your grandmother has to leave her town and move to a metropolitan region, a Rochester, St. Cloud, Duluth, because she can't drive and there's no transit, she can't shop, she can't go to the beauty parlor, she can't go to the doctor, and those businesses are suffering. A lot of us are getting gray. The residents out there are having that trouble. In addition, many of those rural communities have become better at economic development, attracting businesses. Those businesses need workers, and some of those workers rely on transit.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Earhart,
I agree with you with everything, but when the gray hair comes about, speak for yourself.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it's my role to answer Representative Earhart's question, but I live in rural Minnesota, and I'm just thinking about in my community, Mankato, North Mankato. These are the people. I ride the bus. I ride the bus here, too, as well. But what I observe when I'm down at the bus station and there's converging in downtown Mankato is I'm seeing frequently a lot of college students, and I want you to know that another source of funding for transit in rural Minnesota are college students who are helping fund the system in Mankato. I believe it's true in Duluth and St. Cloud as well. I see a lot of I think low income people who can't afford a second car or whatever are riding buses in St. Peter and in the Mankato area. Particularly in the Mankato area, I see a lot of people with disabilities who are able to live independently and move about our community and move to their work. A lot of the work is on the edge of the city, and the bus system serves it well, and there's a lot of people that live a full life because of the bus system. I don't know how they would be able to manage to get to work without that. And then finally, in the summertime, children are encouraged to ride the bus and are given some free passes and gives children mobility in our town. And so the bus is increasingly a central part of the city. For example, I was speaking with the South Central College the other day, and they are poorly served, and they're looking at ways. They see a need to be better served. I work with students at Minnesota State University. Minsky is encouraging students to study in more than one institution. So we need to enhance students who are studying at both institutions to get back and forth, and buses is a reasonable way to do that. So I just want to assure you that the bus is central to the fabric of at least my community, and I think I could say that for St. Peter as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Hughes, and on deck is Mr. Klatt. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hornstein, my name is Matt Hughes. I'm the Minnesota Managing Director for Cooperative Network. We're a two-state association of various cooperative, not-for-profit, member-owned businesses in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Thank you for allowing me to testify today in opposition to House File 2395. Cooperative Network's broad membership includes a number of local Minnesota cooperatives in the fuel business, and the imposition of a gross receipts tax would negatively impact many agricultural and farm supply member-owned cooperatives that provide various types of motor fuels to consumers and agricultural businesses throughout Minnesota. We wrote a letter to Speaker Thiessen and copied many other legislators, governor, and other key administration officials regarding our opposition to this idea just prior to the introduction of this legislation.
We have also personally informed many legislators in the governor's office and other administration officials of our opposition as well, and we do thank Representative Hornstein for graciously sitting down with us as well. The gross receipts tax, as you know, would create a 5% tax on the annual gross receipts of the first sale or wholesale of a motor vehicle fuel received by a supplier for retail sale in Minnesota. This tax would be in addition to state, federal excise taxes, and any applicable local sales tax. Cooperatives are not-for-profit entities and operate as closely as prudently possible to a zero net margin. Cooperatives return their net revenues in a different setting. These could be profits back to their member owners in the form of payments proportional to their patronage of the cooperative. Much of that patronage finds its way back into the local economy, fueling the kind of consumer spending and reinvestment that is so badly needed in greater Minnesota. These cooperative patronage distributions provide significant economic benefit to rural Minnesota and demonstrate a unique nature of the cooperative business. One of the many pro-consumer aspects of the cooperative business model is that it helps insulate consumers from high energy costs by returning profits to their members. This member benefit could be greatly diminished if consumers must pay a higher price for motor fuel. At first glance, the gross receipts tax appears to be an easy solution to help champion the little guy. In reality, it would be millions of little guys who pay the price. As you know, Minnesota is the number one cooperative state in the nation, with more than 1,000 cooperative businesses headquartered here. These cooperative businesses, in turn, are owned by more than 3.4 million residents in the state. While Cooperative Network is not opposed to sound and efficient investment in our transportation system, we strongly oppose any legislation creating a gross receipts sales tax on motor fuels. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hornstein, thanks.
Thank you very much. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In other words, you do not pay an excess tax on gasoline per gallon now.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
You do not pay an excess tax on per gallon...
The excise tax, Madam Chair?
Mr. Hughes?
If you're saying, yes, the excise tax would apply. Yes, sir.
Well, if you... Madam Chair, if you had one tax substituted for another, what difference would it make to you?
Well,
Mr. Hughes?
I'm Madam Chair, can he rephrase the question?
Mr. Earhart, can you please try to...
Well, I mean, if you had an excess tax, Madam Chair, that you're paying now, and we substitute another tax for it, gross receipts tax, what would be the difference to your...
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative, we would be ending the gas tax.
Madam Chair, I didn't say that, but if one was substituted for another, what difference is the type of tax, as long as it's raising the same amount or thereabouts? If we raise the gas tax by 10 cents, wouldn't that harm your members as well, Madam Chair?
Mr. Hughes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I imagine it may, but the difference is the patronage argument that I made, and also the idea of staying competitive is also important to our members as well.
Madam Chair, what you're saying is you don't want an increase in any kind of tax on gasoline, I think, if I'm hearing you right. Because it's going to harm your members.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't think I would say that necessarily. This particular tax, we believe, is especially harmful to us.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't understand why. That's what I'm asking you. Why does gross receipts tax harm your membership any more than an excess tax? If they were the same amount, what difference would it make?
Mr. Hughes.
Madam Chair, Representative, in part also, aside from what I said, I would also add potentially the administrative burden. I know they talked about a point of sale, that it wouldn't actually be more burdensome, but I think it would be. And when you're talking about our members and offsetting the cost of energy through patronage, we believe there would be a detrimental effect. I'm sorry if I'm not getting at the answer to your question.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess you're not. Maybe I'm not understanding what you're saying, but I think a tax is a tax, or no matter how it falls on your membership, if they're going to pay an equivalent amount of tax on your gasoline or motor fuels, what difference does it make in the form that it comes at? Maybe you don't understand how the gross receipts tax works.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think I do. I'm happy to visit with you afterward, too, if we want to discuss it further and get some clarity and come visit you.
Yes, Madam Chair, that'd be fine. If you would give me some clarity about what you're talking about.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Is Lance Klatt available to testify? Didn't think we saw him. Okay, the next two people up are Commissioner McLaughlin and Commissioner McDonough. Commissioners, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm Peter McLaughlin from the Hennepin County Board and Chair of the County's Transit Improvement Board.
Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner, and Ramsey County's rep on the County Transit Improvement Board.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Almost 6 years ago to the week, next week will be the sixth anniversary of the override of the governor's veto of the 2008 transportation bill.
I remember that.
Madam Chair, that legislation authorized the what amounted to the creation of the county's transit improvement board. Commissioner McDonough and I are two of the three county commissioners who've served on the county's transit improvement board since its founding. The third is Commissioner Krause from Paul Krause from Dakota County. So we're here. We appreciate the faith that the legislature placed in us by giving us the authority to impose a sales tax for the expansion of transit. And as a result of that, the county's transit improvement board has invested in that six-year period in excess of $500 million in transitway expansion and in operations. It's because the counties imposed that tax and made these investments that the central corridor is constructed and scheduled to open on Flag Day, June 14th of this year, that the Cedar Avenue busway into Dakota County is now in operation. We have been able to bring upwards of $1 billion in federal money and federal commitments into the state that we've been able to match. So we're making the transportation pie bigger. In addition to that, we have helped the state when it had budget problems on two occasions. We provided supplemental operating funds for the transit system when the budgets were tight. So we believe we've been a good partner with the state and with the Metropolitan Council. We've been good stewards of the tax dollars, and we've done what the legislature asked us to do, which was to help to finance the expansion of the transit system in the metropolitan area. CTIB has endorsed and supports the increases in sales tax in the region that Representative Hornstein's bill contains. We also support a comprehensive funding package. If you were very much aware as county commissioners of that our businesses and residents need all modes of transportation, and historically we've supported the gas tax for many, many years. And so we believe in a comprehensive investment strategy for transportation. We do have a couple suggestions for modifications to the bill, if you'd like to hear those, Madam Chair.
Sure, that'd be good.
First, we strongly believe that it's important in this new legislation to keep faith with the counties who were given the authority to impose a sales tax and actually took a vote. Five county boards in the metropolitan area took a vote to impose a tax on our taxpayers. So we believe that it's who were given the authority to impose a sales tax and actually took a vote. Five county boards in the metropolitan area took a vote to impose a tax on our taxpayers. So we believe that it's important with that principle in mind that the CTIB quarter of a cent sales tax that's in existence now that remain under the control of CTIB, rather than being thrown into the joint certification pot that's provided for, jointly certified by Met Council and CTIP. We think that is what was promised to the taxpayers. That's what we told our taxpayers, that we were this joint powers board was going to control the funds. We think that ought to continue, and we think we've done a good job of it as well. We think, number two, that transitway expansion needs to be added as a priority allocation for the joint certification pot in the bill. That we just add that to the list of priorities that are there. It has been a priority from day one with the CTIP funds. We think it ought to be continued, and we think that needs to be added to the list that's in the bill. And finally, we would ask for consideration of further allocating a portion of the new revenues that are under consideration here in the metropolitan area. And I'd remind everybody, the sales tax is a tax that's going to be imposed only in the seven-county metropolitan area, not across the rest of the state. We've imposed this tax on our on ourselves in the five counties. We would ask that there be consideration given that a portion of the new revenues be made available to CTIP, beyond our original 0.25%, but some of the new revenue for transit and highway purposes, county highway purposes, and make it discretionary with the counties, so that the counties could invest in county roads with some portion of the funds, or they could invest in our local share of these transit projects, which is approximately 10% in these projects as we're moving forward. That was in the original bill in 2008 when it was at half a percent. When it was cut back to 0.25%, that was then limited only to transit purposes. So we'd like to go back to some of the original intent back in 2008 when the tax was at a 0.5% level. And so this would give counties flexibility in the use of this of some of the funds for county purposes, for either county roads or the county's share of these transit projects. We're putting in 10%. That comes out of property tax. We have also, in discussions with the chair, we've said that in Hennepin County, we're willing to, in order to maintain a balance between roads and transit within the bill, we would be willing to have the requirement that any funds that would come to Hennepin County out of this set aside, that those would have to be used for transit purposes. So we, in order to keep the balance between transit and roads. So we think that's a reasonable consideration given the combination of road and county property tax share in these transit projects. Finally, Madam Chair, it has come to our attention that there's been some concern raised about whether there's the allocation of CTIP's funds to date has been regionally balanced. I would say that from the beginning, before we created the Joint Powers Board, the concerns about regional balance were very much in our minds. And so I would ask you, there was some handouts that were provided. I believe you got them, yes? All right, thank you. And on the one side is a map that shows the various corridors. That's this map here that shows the various corridors in which we have invested so far. And you can see that it goes across the region. On the other side of that, there is a pie chart. And that pie chart indicates the capital grants that we've provided in this 2008 through 2013 period, it shows what percentage has been invested in each of the five counties that participate in the county's transit improvement board. And as you can see, the Ramsey County received 52% of the funds. That's because Central Corridor was our first corridor. That was our commitment, and we split in this chart. The split is 70% is attributed to Ramsey, 30% is attributed to Hennepin. That's what the split has been for, 10 years, Commissioner McDonough? That was what we agreed upon because of the length of the corridor in the two counties. But in addition to that, you can see the percentages that the other counties have received, with Hennepin next at 33, 8% for Dakota, 3 for Washington, and 4 for Anoka. I think it's fair to say that we've made special provisions for Washington County. They ask for a guarantee that they would have some funds available, even though they didn't have projects that were really ready to go when we started out. So we've provided them with a guarantee of a return on the taxes that are generated in their county, and we've actually given them more flexibility in what they can use the funds for. We have not been paying for early studies, for example, out of these funds, except in Washington County, because, again, they weren't as far along, and so we allowed Washington County to use some of these funds for some studies. So I think we've accommodated Washington County's special status in a positive way. Down below, you can see where the taxes are generated. 55% from Hennepin, 18 from Ramsey, 13 from Dakota, 6 from Washington, and 9 from Anoka. I think if you look then at this final chart, you can see the projects that are in the queue now in this bubble. We think we've got capital funding and operating funding for those projects, and what this new tax would allow is for the build-out of the rest of these lines. The rest of the lines that are on this chart. And we'd go from there is a degree of competition within CTIB, but we're also, we've been working cooperatively, and literally every capital grant that we've made has been a unanimous vote at CTIB. And so we've worked together, but with the new funds that are in this bill, we are going to be able to work on multiple corridors simultaneously, and that's why we're in very enthusiastically in support of the bill. So, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner McDonough.
Thank you. And welcome, Commissioner McDonough.
And I'll just add a few words, and then certainly we can stand for questions. But certainly the quarter cent that we were given the authority to impose in 2008, and that was a big deal for us to do. But five counties did help position us to move Central Corridor forward, and which we did, and we're going to celebrate that grand opening in June. And at the same time, I think it really positioned us, even though the sales tax wasn't a part of the Union Depot, it helped position us to advance Union Depot with federal support and some state support as the East Metro Transit Hub, and helping us position us in the East Metro here for these future transit investments. So I think we're well positioned to advance, but it's not enough to fund and position us to continue our advancement on these corridors. So we're strongly supportive here in Ramsey County. We took a vote at our Ramsey County Board to be supportive of increased funding for transit investment and road investment. We have been able to do some property tax relief with some of the investments already when we've been able to utilize these investments mm-hmm. that we've been given the authority, and we hope we'll be able to do that in the future because we've had to rely on property tax in the past. If you recall, before 2008, the local share was 17% of property tax, and we were able to reduce that to 10% with this 2008 bill. So with that, I could stand for, well, I'm more than willing to stand for some questions here, but very supportive of advancing this bill. And I am very cognizant of the East-West Metro issues. Representative Mahoney is my representative. I'm very proud to have him as my representative, and I'm also his commissioner. I hope he's just as proud to have me as his commissioner. And I think, you know, we all take a lot of strategies here, the history on the East and West, but I believe our strategies. The best strategy is for us to all do our job and get our quarters ready and teed up, but at the same time make sure we have enough funding to advance those quarters and get those quarters advanced with the proper amount of funding.
Okay, I actually have a question for Commissioner McLaughlin. You mentioned county highways. Did you mean to say county highways? Because I think of trunk highways. Are you talking about county? And then later you mentioned county, I believe, roadways or whatever. I'm not sure. Is that what? Go ahead.
I meant county roads.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
County roads that were responding.
Thank you. I want to clarify that for the record. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Oh, we have Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suspect that this particular graphic was designed specifically for me. And for my amendment for tomorrow, and that might be just fine. I mean, you know, I'm not colorblind to this badly at 52%, but I think your graph here is dramatically overshadowed by the fact that I think other than the Central Corridor. I think it's a streetcar on Robert Street, if I'm reading it correctly. We have a bus rapid transit on the Gateway that is due to be finished 2022. I'm going to be kind and round down. Robert Street hybrid bus rapid transit sometime just 2022, and people can go down and do those themselves, and they could see all of those. I mean, we're literally in the East Metro more than a decade out on almost all of them, and that's, you know, that, you know, there's many multiple reasons, many multiple excuses given. Oh, we have to follow federal guidelines, and federal guidelines figure to, you know, go towards density.
Well, for the last 25 years, we have been building density by investing billions and billions of dollars in the West Metro, while starving every other area of the metro area. So, it is about time we start trying to change that investment process. And which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you do transit in order to attract the businesses and the constituents and the people that want to live there? Or do you wait and continue to invest in one particular part of the state, one particular part of the metro counties, and then hope that some crumbs fall to the table? And if you take a look at that second chart that I held up, almost all of it is rubber on the roads and any kind of adjustment. And then, members, I'll ask you to go to your bill. On page 13, line 13, to the Metropolitan Council for Development and Construction, Southwest Light Rail, Botno Boulevard, Riverview, Robert Street, Red Rock, Gateway, and then all of a sudden there's a new one, the I-394 Commuter Corridor. Now, if I remember that correctly, the state invested millions in the I-394 corridor, and declared it complete. And all of a sudden, in this bill, it's back for something else, and it's not on any of the charts. So you wonder why I, as a legislator from the East Metro, start to question what's going on. And you can answer any way you want, but I pretty much I can drive on any street in the East Metro. I can look at the charts. What might be more important is what the investment was here. And before you answer that particular question, I would like the total investment done by the state in the West Metro. And I'm sure you don't have that.
Right.
But I kind of have those numbers back in the office. Not like Tommy Rukavina, I don't have it in my pocket. But it is huge compared to wherever else in the state. And I don't have any question. I am just tired of being the poor cousin, the ugly redheaded stepchild in the closet.
Okay. Which commissioner would like to address his question?
I would respond.
Okay, Commissioner McLaughlin.
Representative Mahoney didn't pose it as a question.
Oh, okay.
It's really up to you. But I would say all the counties gathered behind Central Corridor as the first major commitment. $284 million out of this CTIB resources went into Central Corridor. It doesn't happen. There's no corridor that matters more to the east side than that. You then build from that, and that's what we're talking about in the future, is additional investments. I think we've done our job so far, and what we're saying is we build out these other corridors, and there's on this chart, you're correct, there are some rubber wheels, but there's also an LRT option for a rush line, which is Ramsey County. There is an LRT for the Riverview Corridor option. That's an option there as well. And then the streetcar on Robert is an option there. And so those are possibilities. Those projects are early in the planning stage. And I can't apologize for how long these things take. I can't. They take forever. Okay, I wish it could be faster, but this is how long it takes. This is the steps you have to march through, and I will say we remain committed to making these investments on the east side. We made, I think, the first fundamental investment for the east side, which was Central Corridor, and everybody gathered, rallied around that, and we'll continue to do that. So I understand the frustration. I think, I think we all know what the history in the Riverview Corridor was. That
And that's now back. And Commissioner McDonough and I have talked about that. And I encouraged him to go to the city council in St. Paul and get that back in the queue. And he did that. He did great work to get that done. And so now that one, there's a committee that's now meeting. I'm on the committee because it ends up going to the airport. And so I'm committed. I will continue to work to make these investments work across the region. And so I'm happy to work with you on it as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, commissioners, for your leadership in creating a multimodal transportation system in Minnesota.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. We have two more testifiers on our list, and one. Okay, Bob Carney, thank you. And then Leslie Davis would like a couple more minutes to address the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Carney, welcome. Minneapolis. I promised Chairman Hornstein that I'd be brief. My concern about what's going on here is that we have a lot of new money being proposed in the chamber, of course, is not supporting it. They did support it back in the override in 2008. Rod Hamilton was the other representative who was renominated. I spoke with everybody at that time and followed that very closely. I think it was unfortunate it became so partisan. Lyle Schwarzkopf said that the amount of retaliation, frankly, was really over the top from his point of view. Very unfortunate. We can't do this in a partisan way. We need to think about what is best for the metro region and for the state, including outstate. There's a lot that can be done for the systems like St. Cloud, where all the buses meet together and go out. The one suggestion that I'd like to make is that let's open up our thinking to what we can do with the technology that exists and the technology that we know that is coming, and that includes automated driving. I've got a plan that I've laying out for a Southwest alternative to light rail, and these light rail lines are becoming enormously expensive. I think they're very problematic. You're talking about $2.5 billion for a Southwest and Bottineau. A $500 million bus system was ruled out in favor of a $1 billion light rail system for that. And I think that the fact that the chamber is finding there's no support among the members is an indication that they really question the value of this. So let me just conclude by stating that I'm going to be sending out a letter to legislators and other elected officials asking everybody to endorse the idea of my putting this plan together and some additional things that I've got laid out, and do a presentation, one-day presentation, to two technical experts from MnDOT, two from Metro Transit, one from Hennepin and Ramsey County, one from Minneapolis, and one from St. Paul, to take a look at whether this alternative transit revolution that I'm proposing is realistic. And the fundamental question to be posed to these technical experts, first, is there a fundamental flaw? Then I'll have a series of subsidiary questions. But we need to get some additional thinking on the table. And the failure of the chamber to support it, the concerns that people have about the enormous expense of light rail and the North Star and so forth, these are some real warning signs that we've got to stop and think about what we're doing and what the best thing to do is for generations to come in Minnesota.
Well, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Carney. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Leslie Davis.
Leslie Davis, Madam Chair. Sorry if I offended you earlier today.
Apology accepted, thank you.
It wasn't my intention. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add a little comedy to the serious matter. I think what I established earlier is how banks create the money. That was that one page, the part of the four, that they create this money in their computers, whether you go in for a personal loan or whether you ask for a $1 billion bond from Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs. All they do is create it in the computer, charge you $1 million for a fee, and then charge you interest for decades. So we can do that ourselves in Minnesota. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I know that it requires the federal government to coin the money and create post roads. That's what we are tearing off, my colleagues and I. And we visited number of you folks over the years. This is Byron Dale's invention. It's not something I created, and Gregory Soderbergh. They're experts in this area. So we know how the banks create the money, and we know that the powers of Minnesota State Chartered Banks lie with you. You're the lawmakers. You make the laws that require these state chartered banks what to do and how to do it. So if you simply tell them that we want you to create the money for approved road and bridge projects, and by approved I mean if some little community wants, if Rosemont wants to build a road, we'll do it exactly the way they do it today. They'll get the bid, it'll be so wide, so far, MnDOT will take a look at it, and the low appropriate bid will get the job. And depending on how the rules are written, the Rosemont State Bank, or maybe one of our other state banks that we have control over, not Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank, will create the electronic checkbook money and pay for the project. It doesn't cause inflation because it's a payment for materials and for labor. It doesn't cause the price of Tootsie Rolls at Walmart to go up. So that's what this does. Then we can take off, instead of talking about increasing the fuel tax, we'll take off the fuel tax because we won't need the portion that goes for roads and bridges, because we'll create the money. When I first came upon this plan and met Byron Dale and Gregory Soderbergh, I raised them up on my charts. I said, this is the most fantastic thing I ever saw. And I'm not some starry-eyed little kid that hasn't been around for a while. I've raised a family. I've spent millions of dollars. I know what's going on. And this is the most colossal opportunity that you have to be the most spectacular legislators in the history of America by taking control of your own pocketbook, by telling the state-chartered banks that you will create this electronic checkbook money separate from their other business, where they're supervised by the Department of Commerce. This will be a separate account, and the way they, so we were asked one time by Mr. King Banyan, who was a representative here. He's an economic guy from St. Cloud. He said, well, how will the banks record that on their books? If they put out $1 million for a road project, $1 million goes out. I said, that'll be project so-and-so. That'll be on the other side of the ledger. And when that's paid for, that closes out that column. It doesn't inflict on the other assets or other activities of the bank. Then the fuel tax, axle tax, and registration taxes will go away. There'll be $850 to $1.3 billion to return to the people that paid it. So when I come with this plan, tell me what's wrong with it. Why won't this work? The banks will do it because it'll be the law.
Thank you.
They're going to obey the law. This money will come into circulation, debt-free wealth money, instead of more debt money. Can't keep piling on more debt on top of the debt. Somebody's going to catch on to this sooner or later besides me. And you can't pay debt with debt, and you can't increase the money supply with debt. And then this money will come into circulation. It'll go around a number of times, be taxed at various points along the way as new workers come in and workers get paid and spend their money. And where are they going to go with their check? They're going to go to these banks that created that money. It's going to be spectacular for the banks. I met with Joe Witt, who's the president.
Mr. Davis, if you could wrap up your testimony. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Joe Witt, he's the president. He loved the idea. He just wants to know what's in it for us, the banks. What do they get out of it? I said, well, you'll get a service fee for doing this. You'll get a spectacular economy that reemerges with wealth money. People will want a bigger SUV and a swimming pool, and they'll come to you. And when the workers come, they'll bring their checks to you. So what's wrong with this program? Why don't we do it? Just change this little law, and we're on our way. What's the problem?
Okay, well, thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. Is there anyone else in our that's with us tonight that would like to testify for or against the bill that's before us? Okay. Well, thank you. If members could, Representative Hornstein, would you like to make any remarks or save them for tomorrow?
I love it, Frank. You've known about it for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. No, members, thank you very much for your indulgence. We have had great testimony today. I was especially appreciative that I was able to hear some of the opponents, which we hadn't heard from in the previous hearing. So that was very helpful to me. And, no, I just really appreciate, again, everybody sticking it out on a long day. I'm glad we didn't do amendments and vote tonight, because it's been a very long day. But get some rest, because we'll be taking up amendments tomorrow at 10 a.m. If people also have questions of me and the bill, we can entertain those as well. So we'll do our amendments and then vote on the bill tomorrow. If the debate goes on, we may have to reconvene after session, but I highly doubt that'll be the case. But just keep that in mind when we're debating tomorrow. And with that, I would just wish everybody a good night and safe trip home.
Okay, and so, members, if you could put your materials back in your notebooks, because we won't be adding new ones. They'll be what we have used for today. And then we will be laying this bill over, and we will be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. The meeting is now adjourned.